on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget, we are streamed on the World Wide Web at WGNU.net. Also, the show is archived daily at WhiteRoseSociety.org. So if you missed an hour, go get your hour. There are all kinds of issues that are percolating and impacting upon us. It seems like just minute by minute, second by second. One of the issues that is right here in front of us is this issue of immigration. And as a person of African descent, it is a fascinating thing to watch. I wasn't a child of the 60s. I wasn't there during all of the civil rights movement issues and actions and events. So it's fascinating to be here and to watch this immigration issue unfold and to watch kind of in a Katrina-esque way, to watch America be revealed. What does America really think of each other? How does America think that people should really be treated? who should have access to what? It is Katrina-esque. We saw Who Cares About Who after Katrina devastated New Orleans, the Ninth Ward, and the Gulf Coast. We saw our government's response to the cries of despair, the loss, and the need for help. It's fascinating. It revealed how America cares, how America doesn't care. I believe that this immigration issue is doing the same thing. We need to talk about this immigration issue, because something very powerful is afoot. Something very revealing is afoot. And to facilitate that conversation, I have joining me from Washington, D.C., an immigration policy analyst, Flaviva Jimenez. Good morning, Flaviva. Good morning. Good morning. And we also have joining us from Oakland, California, independent reporter and a photojournalist, David Bacon. David, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And Flaviva, good morning.
Hi. Good morning. It's Flavia. Thank
Flavia.
You.
Flavia. I apologize for that.
No problem.
Flavia, I'd like to start with you. We hear this, at least I have, when I listen to the news, I hear a distinction being made between illegal and undocumented. Tell us, who are we talking about when we are discussing an immigrant from the perspective of this immigration bill that is going down in Congress?
Right. Well, it's really an issue of linguistics and semantics, and I think it's an important one to note that it's not correct in the English language to denote someone as being illegal. And unfortunately, our mass media is too quick to say that they are illegal immigrants by nature of their by their immigration status, but they are not illegals. It's just simply not correct. So we like to use the term undocumented, and really what we're talking about is folks that are in this country who, by nature of their inability to obtain a visa to come over legally, have entered without inspection or have overstayed a visa. So folks that might have come over perhaps as a tourist and have with perhaps no intention to stay and did in fact then find that they wanted to stay in the United States, or, that did, in fact, have an intention to stay and had an ability to obtain a job but could find no legal channels of coming over to the United States. And that's really what the problem is right now, is the lack of visas and the outdated system that we have, and that is why we see so many, such a broad coalition and really millions of people in the United States right now calling for immigration reform.
And when we use those words, though, that when I've had callers call me and, as the kids say, tripping on the word illegal, that was the only thing that came out of their mouth, is they're illegal, they're illegal, they're illegal, they're illegal, they're illegal. So it serves a purpose from a political perspective to describe people as illegal.
Yeah, I think it does, and unfortunately people have turned it into a rather simplistic issue of just calling someone an illegal and saying, well, which part of illegal did you not understand?
Right.
There are many, sort of the way we like to describe it is, there are many laws that are passed in this country and that are currently in the books that we're not necessarily, we all know are not the correct ones. We know are not good laws. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we abide by every single law. We do, of course, want to bring back the rule of law in this debate, and we want people to come over legally. We want people to abide by the law once they're here. We all want that. But we know that there are sometimes laws that we don't agree with or that we know are just so outdated, and we sometimes knowingly or unknowingly break them all the time. And the problem with immigration right now is that it's such an outdated law and it's such a broken system that's why we find so many millions of people you know, trying to incorporate themselves into their communities and trying to do good, but just unable to find visas to come over to the United States legally. And so that's why we find that there are so many, you know, quote, undocumented people in the U.S. currently.
And David, it feels rather cynical to me for people howling about the illegality of this, given what's going on with our good government right now. It feels a little fraudulent.
Well, I think what's going on is that people are being demonized, and this word illegal is being used to do it. What we're talking about are working people. You know, these are working people who were forced out of their homes in Mexico and in other countries, primarily by economic conditions that are in part the result of free trade and agreements like NAFTA, and who, in order to be able to support their families, have to go and find work somewhere, and a lot of them are coming to the United States. So, you know, people are coming out into the streets all over this country saying, essentially, that those people who are here should be given real legal status, in other words, made legal. And the way to do that is to give people permanent residence, a green card, not some kind of second-class temporary worker or guest worker status, but to give people a green card that would allow them to exercise their rights, and also give people a way of coming here legally as free people. And what the problem is that Congress is so disconnected from the demand that's being made in the streets, so that on the one hand, we have this horrible proposal in Congress that was passed last December in the House of Representatives that would turn 12 million people into federal felons.
And let's stop.
And the other hand, just one second. And the other hand, in the Senate, what we have is a bill that almost got passed last week that was basically written by big corporations to turn the flow of migrants across our borders into simply a source of temporary contract workers for large corporations.
And
neither one of these alternatives really means equality.
And I want to fully discuss both of those, but I'd like to back up a little bit and start with what people, the scene that people have seen. Let's talk about this from a movement perspective first, and then I'd like to move to the actual horrific language and horrific ideas behind the legislation that has been passed. Flavio, let's talk about this from a movement perspective. As I said in my opening, you cannot help but compare this to the civil rights movements that have taken place in this country. What's different here, though, it appears as if there is no one single leader in charge of it. Is that significant, and is that so?
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary, actually, that this is really so organic in the terms of the movement. There is really not one leader that has surfaced, and it's pretty extraordinary that people are just taken to the streets and understanding that they do have that potential and that right to exercise First Amendment, which in many of their countries, of course, many of the, you know, Latin American countries, many of the African countries, many of the, Middle Eastern countries that folks may be here under different statuses, but, you know, those rights aren't necessarily always, peacefully adhered to. And so it's really interesting that people are organizing themselves in this way. I think that it is shifting the political debate somewhat.
Certainly the first 500,000, I think, definitely shifted the debate. When they saw 500,000 people in one place and then all over the country.
Right. Yeah, no, certainly, and it is significant, I think, that there haven't been marches like this since the civil rights movement. And since you've mentioned it, I think that being from working at a civil rights organization, it's extremely important for us to learn from the African American movement in this country and understand that we really do have on our hands issues of inequality. We have issues of human dignity. We have issues of being recognized by society as someone who can work and be productive and contribute, and learn those lessons and thank, I think, our civil rights leaders today from the 60s, for giving us, you know, sort of paving the way, and join hands really and try and make the table bigger at this point.
And David, talking about this movement, Do you think that component of the movement of people coming out is a revelation to a lot of Americans of just how many people are in our country that are here to work? It seems as if that this particular population, the immigrant population, has been out of sight, out of mind.
Well, you know, I think that in the newspapers these days, it's being called the sleeping giant awakening. But I think actually that immigrant workers in this country have been very, very active for quite a while. If you look at the big organizing and union drives that are going on in industries like the hotel industry or meatpacking or among janitors, you can see that immigrant workers are some of the most active people in fighting to organize unions, in trying to get wages to increase, in protecting people's civil rights. And I think that also immigrants are part of a larger political process that is also moving, especially big cities, in a progressive direction. You look at the election of Antonio Villaraigosa as the mayor of Los Angeles, and you can see that immigrants and African Americans, especially in Los Angeles, were able to find common ground and come together in a political coalition that put into office, I think one of the most progressive mayors that we're going to have in Los Angeles in modern history here. So I think that...
But it is to many Americans still very surprising.
You mean the sheer numbers?
The sheer numbers of people is
right.
Shocking to a lot of Americans because it's been, from their perspective, out of sight, out of mind.
Well, I think that's true. You know, the numbers are really, a lot bigger than I think people have been thinking about. And also when you look at the way in which people have become really not just a necessary element of our economy. In other words, there are whole industries that are dependent on the labor of immigrant workers now, not just agriculture, but construction and meatpacking and part of the healthcare industry and so on are very dependent. Tourism are very dependent on immigrant people. But also, I think what it's also showing is that immigrants are part of our communities here. You know, that people go to school with the children of immigrants, that when you go to church, there are immigrants all around you. When you are out in the street shopping at a mall, you look around you, and many of the people around you are people who were born in other countries. So this is part of the fabric of our culture. But, in a way, this is not something new. This is something that has been part of our history for a long time, and it's kind of, on the one hand, we're realizing that this is the case, and I think also this is kind of a rejection of this idea that somehow, this is some new foreign threat or that people
Absolutely.
Are coming here in a way
Absolutely.
Threatening to us.
And I know that you have to leave at the bottom of the hour, so I want to get back to the issue that you brought up to hear your view on it. You talked about the legislation being introduced as either a super advantage to corporations to have cheap labor or the punitive criminal component, guest worker status type of thing. Talk to us about the criminal component of it because it's really breathtaking what came out of the House.
Well, that bill would not only build a 700-mile-long wall on the border between the U.S. and Mexico, and after all, we're supposed to be two countries that are friends with each other, but it would also say that those people who are here without immigration documents are going to have to go into the court system, that they're going to become federal felons.
The criminal court system.
Children. You're talking about people who just simply came here in order to work. But then you also have the Senate bill, which, if it were to go into law, what was on the floor of the Senate when they adjourned last week, first of all, 1 million people would be deported right away, those people who have been here for less than 2 years. The other people who have been here for longer would have to become part of a temporary worker program. And then large corporations would be able to open up recruitment offices in other countries and bring people here under kind of a second-class status that would make them very vulnerable to exploitation. But one thing I do want to say is that there is a positive alternative in Congress as well, too, that gets almost no discussion, and that is a proposal by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee from Houston that's supported by a number of members of the Congressional Black Caucus that is very different. and it would protect the rights of immigrants instead of punishing them. It would say that people who have been here for longer than 5 years could become permanent residents or get a green card, which essentially would make people the equal of those people in the community around them. And it would also look for common ground, especially between African Americans and immigrants, by saying that the fees that are being paid by people who are normalizing their status would be used to set up job training and job creation programs in communities with high unemployment. So what she's doing is she's trying to get at this whole question of job competition and say, look, instead of competing against each other, as guest worker proposals would do, we can find common ground. And the way we do that is we defend, on the one hand, the rights of people, and we give people equal status. And secondly, we work towards a full full employment economy. In other words, we try and fight for jobs, because really jobs is what it's all about. We all need to work. Whether we're African American or white or Asian American or immigrants or people who were born here, we all need to work. And so if we fight for a full employment economy and jobs programs, then the basis for competing against each other is kind of removed. So that's, I think, what she's trying to get at here.
And don't we also have, I mean, it's not like we don't have a place to look to see whether the guest worker status practice or program has worked. This is something that Europe has tried, and it's not working well for them, is it?
And it didn't work in our history either. You know, we had a huge bracero program from 1942 to 1964, and the people who fought to abolish that were people like Cesar Chavez, who said that it was really not possible for the United Farm Workers Union to get organized and for farm workers to successfully organize so long as growers had this ability to control their labor force in that kind of way, using these kind of second-class guest worker bracero type programs. So they ended Public Law 78 in 1964, and the Great Grape Strike, in which the United Farm Workers Union was born, started the year after, in 1965.
Excellent. And, David, I know that you have to leave us. I want to thank you very much. David Bacon, independent reporter and photojournalist, thank you for calling us from Oakland, California.
It was my pleasure to be with you.
Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much, much to talk about. We'll be back to take some of your questions and calls. We still have with us Flavia Jimenez, immigration policy analyst, joining us from Washington, D.C. Stay with us. We're talking immigration.
Following is the best of the wake-up call. Liz will be back on Wednesday, but until then, we're playing more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Southbound 94 at Freedens is closed due to an accident. Eastbound 44 at Luce and Chrysler. Look for everything to be on move. Westbound 270 at Illinois Route 3 all the way to Canal Bridge looks good. Northbound 270 at 44 is moving steady. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for some delays as they're still having paving operations going on at this hour. The Eads Bridge is closed till Wednesday for the Eads Bridge event, and eastbound 40 onto the Poplar Bridge, the right center lane, is also closed at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Try Sonic's tasty and hearty bacon, egg, and cheese breakfast burrito. Make it a classic combo with Sonic's classic tots or fries and a regular coffee or a regular soft drink. Breakfast at Sonic, it's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. For today, hot, partly cloudy. Chance for showers this afternoon with a high in the mid-90s. This evening, partly cloudy till early morning, becoming mostly cloudy. 40% chance of showers overnight, with a low around the mid-70s. For Independence Day, not quite as warm. Showers and thunderstorms are likely, high in the mid-80s. And Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently, we have 77 degrees at the studios of AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out until Wednesday. We will have Irene J. Smith, I believe, in the 7 o'clock hour here. So until then, we're going to run more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. For the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
Former undisputed world welterweight champion Corey, the Next Generation Sphinx, will challenge the IBF junior middleweight champion Roman Made in Hell Karmazon for his crown. Sphinx has to redeem himself in front of his hometown fans. But Roman Karmazon from the gritty streets of Russia has no intention of losing his belt in St. Louis. Saturday, July 8th, Savage Center, St. Louis. It'll be a tough night of boxing. Be there! Also featuring the return of the former unified cruiserweight champion Jean-Marc Mormack on his quest to regain his crown. And undefeated local talent, Devin Alexander, fights for the WBC Youth Welterweight Championship. Savage Center, Saturday, July 8th, live. Karmazon versus Sphinx, IBF Junior Middleweight Championship. Tickets start at just $25 through Savage Center. Ticketmaster locations, Ticketmaster.com, or call 314-241-1888 or 314-421-4400. Fight cards subject to change. It's a losing.
Hello, St. Louis. My name is Oliver. You may or may not be familiar with my work. I like sports. I can be very opinionated. And I will be hosting my very own radio show. Join me every Monday night from 7 to 8 p.m. The Oliver Show on WGNU 920 AM.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Liz will be back with us on Wednesday. Until then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. Our discussion this hour is the issue of immigration. We have hundreds of thousands of immigrants taking to the street to demand the same thing that all Americans demand. And we have a Congress that is trying to or about the business of coming up with legislation to address this issue. Our guest this morning is Flavia Jimenez, an immigration policy analyst joining us from Washington, D.C. Flavia, welcome back. And I want to get to some of our calls, if you don't mind.
That's fine. Thank you.
Alfred, you have a question for our guest.
Yes. First of all, the way I see it, it don't make no difference what name you put on the people here from other countries. The bottom line, they don't have the right papers to be here. They shouldn't be here. And another thing with David said, I don't understand David and I don't understand this lady. It was talking about this trade agreement that those people in other countries lost their job. So they come into the United States for the land of opportunities. Well, if David or her been here any length of time, every day our jobs are leaving here, going overseas. Our skilled jobs are leaving here. The other day they was talking about in the hospital, different doctors.
Okay, and I got your point. We're going to address that. Flavia, let's talk about that. The first observation of Alfred's was, bottom line is that they don't have a right to be here.
Right. Well, and I think that we can all agree, as I mentioned earlier, that we do want to bring back the rule of law to this debate, and we do want people to come over legally, and that's exactly why National Council of La Raza and hundreds of other organizations all around the country are pushing for a real reform, a comprehensive reform of the law, What we're talking about is a system that is very broken that needs to be fixed, and that's why we're all working so hard.
But also, don't we have to say, okay, people are here. The fact of the matter is that millions of working people are here. So what do we do?
Exactly, and it's that's the right question to ask. So, fine, people don't have the right to be here, or people say, okay, well, you know, they're illegal. That's okay, and that's a problem. You're signaling to a problem. So let's work on a solution. So the solution would be. What? And I think that's really what the question is to folks out there, is what is the solution? The solution really is to bring about a legalization program that so that the people that are here can earn their way to legal status. This is not a free pass. This is not simply an amnesty. It's earning your way. You have to pay a fine. You have to go through a background check. You have to go through a criminal check. You have to make sure that you pay back taxes if you've been working. And you have to go, you know, learn English and prove that you're knowledgeable on American civics. As Senator from South Carolina said the other day, Senator Graham said, you know, hell, if these laws were in place 50 years ago, half my family wouldn't qualify for legal permanent status. Mm-hmm. So these are pretty rigorous laws and pretty rigorous rules that we're saying to people, okay, if you're here, you gotta prove all these things.
And they're doing something that others
stay legally.
And they're doing something that other people who have immigrated here under the same conditions, undocumented, haven't had to do.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And many of them, you know, many of them will be able to prove that they can stay, and some of them will not. And for those people that cannot prove that they are, that they can work, and that for those people that are not able to fulfill the requirements, you know, they will simply have to return to their home countries and try again and come over perhaps in a way that is legal. And I just want to clarify, there's a big difference between guest worker programs, and so we all have to be knowledgeable and careful. A guest worker program that does not lead to permanent status and does not lead to eventually citizenship is not something that we would endorse. But a temporary worker program that would allow a person to come over here legally, work for a number of years, and then eventually, if they wish, apply for the legal permanent status or their green cards, that is something that National Council of La Raza does endorse, because we have to address this issue of people coming in the future. If we don't address this issue, then that is something we're going to have to readdress this problem, because people are going to continuously try to come into the United States.
And I think what Alfred didn't understand, Flavia, is the whole impact of a plan and the NAFTA agreement that we signed, that it was our idea and we put in place. NAFTA is a reason why some people are coming across the border for jobs here, right? That's inescapable.
Right, yes, and that does add, obviously complicate things when you're talking about free trade agreements and sort of what that does to the home country and sort of the poverty that it might create in the home country. And so that's why many people do choose to move, because simply they can't make a living.
And that's something that we as a nation have contributed to. So if we're going to start taking a look at everything that is happening, we need to take a look at everything that is happening.
Right, and I think that it's fine for people to be frustrated. I think we understand the frustration that people are under. We understand why people are saying, but this can't be, we've got to change it. That's right, we do have to change it. And my suggestion is that people in the state, you know, this their states, call their senators, call their congressmen, and say, we need real comprehensive immigration reform that not only legalizes people who are here undocumented, but allows for people to come in legally in the future and protects all workers' rights. That's what we all want. We all want strong labor protections in all of these.
And let's talk about strong labor protections for one minute. The caller, Alfred, also raised the concern about this is the reason why our jobs are leaving. This is the reason why our jobs are going to India. Is immigration the reason why jobs are going to India, or is it the way people are paid?
No, certainly not. I think that it's a problem that we have overall, because not just because of immigration, but because of the nature of the corporate system in this country, and the fact that the reason the jobs are leaving the country is that there are certain sectors and certain industries that find cheaper labor abroad. But that doesn't mean that that's an immigration system's fault. I think it's just, you know, corporations look to cut costs whenever they can. And this is one way in which they've found that they can cut costs. So this is more of a labor issue, not so much of an immigration issue. But what I can say is that immigration overall helps the U.S. economy by creating jobs. Now, there are certain circumstances in which there are areas of the United States, certain cities which do have high unemployment, and in those areas we do have to pay particularly careful lessons learned there, and we do have to work on training people for certain types of jobs and skills. But, you know, in certain areas of the United States and in certain industries, you know, immigrants do contribute greatly. They do pay taxes for the most part. There's a earned suspense fund in our Social Security Administration, which is over $400 billion that simply would not exist if it weren't for the payment of taxes by undocumented immigrants.
Because the money comes right out of their check.
It comes right out of their checks, and oftentimes they're, you know, if they remain undocumented or if they leave the United States and go back to their countries,
they never get it.
They never get it back. Mm-hmm. You know, it's money that they're paying and that they're never going to see again. So,
but let's talk. Can we talk real quickly here, Flavia, about the loss of jobs versus the depression of wages? Okay, I understand that immigration is not the reason for loss of jobs, but there is an issue of the depression. People's concern about, well, if employers are allowed to have guest workers, they're going to keep the wages low, and therefore my wages are going to be low, so that's the fault of immigration of immigrants.
Right. Well, right now we do have a problem in which there are many times employers who are looking, of course, again to cut their losses and gain profits that will pay the worker the least that they can. Right. So what we're looking towards here is creating a system in which the undocumented worker who might be working for $6 an hour or $5 an hour, to give that person legal status puts them in equal footing with their colleague, with the person next to them who might be doing the exact same job and sort of and maybe wanting more wages. What we're doing is what we're talking about is raising the floor for everyone, because once you give that person legal status, it makes them less exploitable.
There you go.
It makes them more able to really unionize with their workers,
they can
organize
say,
with their workers, and ask for better wages and better rights for everyone.
They can say, I'm not scared that you're going to ship me out of this country. I'm
right
here just like somebody else, and you can't pay me this, and
right,
I don't have to, and I don't have to take this salary from
and
you.
And the same thing goes for people who are here that might be on temporary visas, but who do have the right to go to other jobs and who do have the right to eventually ask for their legal permanent status, because they're not afraid. If they lose their job, that's okay. They can always
get another one.
Get another job. Mm-hmm. It's called portability in the immigration system. It's called portability. It's okay. If I've come over and one employer is hiring me, always having portability is very important for that worker, because that worker can go look for another job. They will be in equal footing with their brothers and sisters, and they can organize, they can ask for better wages, better benefits.
And I guess before we go to our break here, in order to see which one we should want, which one is big business support and which one is big business opposed to?
Well, you know, this is one of those things that big business and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is, you know, says that what they really want is they want people legalized here. And the reason that they're saying that is because it's not so much for humanitarian reasons, but it's more because they really see this as a very, very tenuous issue and very problematic issue if the right wing of the Republican Party gets their way and starts rounding people up and deporting people. That's not just going to be, bad for human rights issues. It's going to be bad
for business.
Because they will see a very large number of their workforce simply rounded up and deported.
And so we have to take a break. So hold that thought, please. Flavia Jimenez, she is the immigration policy analyst with La Rosa. La Rosa?
Yes.
Okay, joining us from Washington, D.C., I am Liz Brown. We're talking about immigration. I see you on the line. I know you have a lot of questions. We'll get back to some of your questions and concerns after this break. Please stay with us.
Liz Brown is on vacation today. She will return, I believe, on Wednesday. Until then, we'll have more of the Best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson, inviting you to join me every Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. You'll hear stories of people just like you who are overcoming obstacles and making the difference in the lives of others. You're invited to share your thoughts. You know people are what matter most to me, and I enjoy talking with you and helping you reach your highest goals. Join me for the Laurie Fulkerson Show, Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. We're here to discuss what matters most to you.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Liz Brown is on vacation, I believe, until Wednesday, so until then we'll run more of the Best of the Wake-Up Call. Irene J. Smith will be filling in for her from time to time today, and that. So now more of the Best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake-Up Call. Our discussion this morning is immigration. Our guest is immigration policy analyst with La Rosa, joining us from Washington, D.C., Flavia Jimenez. And let's get straight to some of our questions and comments. Charles, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, ma'am. My question is, folks that come over here from Cuba and Mexico, and they can't speak a word of English. They want everything in their own language, and they don't want to learn to speak English at all. And to me, if you don't want to speak English, go back to where they came from.
Thanks for your question or your observation. And Flavia, that's not an unfamiliar sentiment that some Americans have. Hello, Flavia?
Hello?
Yes, Flavia. Did you hear the comment?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Well, in fact, at least from the information that we have here at National Council of La Raza from many, many immigrant communities, the problem is not necessarily that people don't want to learn English. The problem is that there are simply not enough classes. I know that, for example, in many community organizations all around the country, teaching English is a very, very central part of their mission, and there's simply not enough teachers, not enough classes. There are waiting lists that are many, many weeks long just for folks to learn English. So, in fact, the point is that people do want to learn English, that people do see it as a benefit to them if they can integrate better into their communities. It's just a lack of classes and a lack of funding for this kind of thing that, keeps people from learning English. And the fact, again, the economics always comes into play. If you're working three jobs, it's hard to find the time. So once we get our immigration laws fixed and we can actually legalize people, they will find themselves with more time on their hands, because maybe they won't have to work three jobs. Maybe they'll just work one, or they will work two, but they will have the weekends, they will have the nights.
in which they can go to English classes.
And also we need to point out that at least as part of some of the legislation that's been introduced has included the requirement of learning of English.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that one will have to prove if you in fact want to become a legal permanent resident and eventually a citizen is that you do have to meet certain requirements about English proficiency.
And has that ever been a requirement for immigration before?
Well, in the naturalization exam does require one to answer certain questions in English.
Okay, but
some sort of disability. But
okay.
there are requirements, but this would even make it a requirement for those that want to just obtain their green card.
So that's different than it has ever been before. This is a new stricter standard.
This is a new standard, and it's much more strict, yes, than it has been before.
All right, let me get to Rick on a cell. Rick, you have a question for our guest?
It was more of a comment. I believe it's all a shell game to keep poor people fighting amongst each other, you know what I mean? Now, these folks come in from Mexico, they're the hardworking folks, hardworking people. I work right alongside of a lot of them, and I see them bringing nothing but a benefit because a lot of them are doing jobs that most Americans will not do. Most Americans are not going to go out and cut yards and pick fruit and vegetables and things of that nature. You know what I mean?
For that price, for that cost.
I just don't see the problem here. You know, and I do believe that this is just something to get our attention away from the war and really important things that's going to matter for us for the next 10, 20, 30 years to us and our kids.
Thank you, Rick, because we only have a few minutes here. There has been a lot of people that have talked about this in terms of using it as a wedge issue to separate out communities that have a whole lot in common, particularly within the community of African descent.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there have been many instances of this as being a divide and conquer kind of thing the right wing of the Republican Party mostly, but I mean also let's be clear, it's not like the Democrats are necessarily fully knowledgeable on this or feel very comfortable talking about this issue either. So we do have to keep really have to keep pressure on our political elected officials to really talk about this issue in the right way and to move forward on this issue the best way possible.
And Flavia, do you see from your perspective a absence of the community of African descent? Are you surprised that there are not more efforts to join up with civil rights organizations and on this issue?
Well, there is, of course, certain differences between those who are of African descent and who are recent immigrants who have chosen to come to the United States, and there are the African Americans who, through no choice of their own, through slavery, came to the United States. And so there are very many different issues there that are driving certain folks of African descent to the table. Trying to, from the Latino perspective, we are making a
the community knows that someone will be able to listen objectively to the concerns they bring up.
So is it dead for this year, Senator?
It is dead for this year.
All right.
You've been listening to the Best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown will be in on Wednesday. Until then, we'll have another hour of the Best of the Wake Up Call, or maybe we'll have the nice lady herself, Irene J. Smith, filling in for Liz. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this be? Revolution in the air, tell me, brothers, how can this end?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. On the agenda for NASA today, top off the Space Shuttle Discovery's fuel system, then wait till tomorrow and watch the forecast. It's hoping the weather will allow for the third attempted launch of the Shuttle Discovery to be a success.
It's hard for everybody. It's probably hardest on the rookie astronauts, not because it's hard on them, but because they have rookie families as well. And all of those families are calling those astronauts going, when is the shuttle going to go?
Astronaut Katie Coleman, who's making her third trip into space. New Jersey state government pretty much closed today and will be until state lawmakers and Governor John Corzine can agree upon a budget. ABC's Lisa Colagrossi in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Corzine is shutting down all state services. First to go, the DMV, the state courts, the lottery. After July 4th, the state will also close its parks, state beaches, historic sites, campgrounds, casinos, and horse racing.
The state could lose about $2 million a day if the casinos are closed. Voters in Mexico have to wait until Wednesday to learn who their new president will be. This voter is hoping it will be the leftist, Andrés Manuel López Obrador.
I believe López Obrador is more a voice for what the majority of the people need and think.
Obrador says he won. Then again, so does conservative Felipe Calderón. Film critic Roger Ebert's wife says he's doing well after having emergency surgery for complications from a previous cancer operation. The Chicago Sun-Times says a blood vessel burst near the site of an operation that Ebert had last month. It's cleanup time for thousands of people in the Northeast hit hard by last week's flooding. Kevin Fisher returned to his home in Yardley, Pennsylvania over the weekend.
It's a loss. Yeah. That's material things, but nobody got hurt.
About 1,000 homes and 150 businesses flooded in Pennsylvania alone. A new study says most states should raise the minimum driving age to 17 and that by doing so, it could save a lot of lives nationwide. Traffic accidents are the leading cause of death for 16-year-olds. This is ABC News.
There's nothing small about today's small business. Big hours make up big work weeks. Every meeting is a big meeting. Every call is a big call. When the only printer for all the computers breaks down, it's a big problem. And now, thanks to Aflac, even small business insurance has gone big. Introducing Aflac for Small Business. Now, your small business can have the same great Aflac products and service the big guys get. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or visit aflacsb.com.
Aflac!
For small business, American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus, Aflac.
Get out of debt and get on with your life. Agencies offering Care One credit counseling services can help. If you have $4, $6, $10,000 in credit card bills, find out how quickly your debt can be paid off. Callers save an average of 30% in payments every month. So gather your bills and call now for a personal debt analysis. Licensing details available. That's Care One Credit Counseling Services, 1-800-695-9092. That's 1-800-695-9092.
Hip-hop artist Lil' Kim walked out of a federal prison in Philadelphia this morning and was cheered by some fans as she got into a Rolls Royce. The singer did almost a year behind bars for lying under oath about a gunfight she'd witnessed she'll do the last 30 days of her sentence under house arrest. If you're going to include fireworks for the 4th of July, leave them to the pros. ABC's Larry Jacobs, meanwhile, checked out a site that can help you find a dazzling show.
Looking for the best fireworks display?
Booms with a view.
Lauren Zeno.
AOLCityGuide.com.
What's there?
Find fireworks near you and look at our spectacular photo tour of the top 11 fireworks displays in the country.
How do you rate the best from the rest?
In a lot of different cities, we looked at the festivals and the fireworks based on the size, the location. Some are on the waterfront or a spectacular park or historical location.
The site covers more than 40,000 events and more than 6,000 venues. Larry Jacobs, ABC News.
And I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
And this WGNU News.
And this WGNU News update is brought to you by Advil Muscle Ache. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news this morning, emergency room doctors are urging people to use caution when setting off fireworks this 4th of July. Dr. Mark Levine, an emergency room doctor at Barnes Jewish Hospital, says the most common injuries he sees from people setting off fireworks are to the arms and legs.
People either throwing them at other people or not throwing them in time. We also see a lot of eye injuries as well from things exploding near people's eyes or people throwing them at people.
Levine says other common injuries are burns. He says if someone is injured while setting off fireworks, they should seek medical treatment immediately. And some news from the sports world. The St. Louis Blues can finally say the deal is done. A group led by former Madison Square Garden president and CEO Dave Checketts finalized its financing Friday and was announced as the official owners of the hockey franchise. Checketts then introduced the team's new president, former Blues goaltender John Davidson. Davidson says he and his family are moving from New York to St. Louis to live here full time.
I've had some opportunities in years past with other cities to do different things, but I was never a part of that city. I was never part of different teams. This is my opportunity to come to a city where I used to live, that I've always spoke highly of, and have a chance to win a championship.
Checkett says finalizing the deal was not easy.
It has been said that nothing in life comes that is worth having comes easy, and that would certainly describe our journey in the purchase of the St. Louis Blues. I'm not complaining, quite opposite. The St. Louis Blues should be defined as something worth having.
General Manager Larry Plow's services will be retained for the 2006-2007 season. The Blues also plan to retire Brett Hull's number 16 next season. Davidson has spent the past two decades in the broadcast booth as a color analyst and a syndicated radio host. And that's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by Advil Muscle Ache. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. Advil, the every pain reliever. I'm Peyton Colston reporting for WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Southbound 94 at Freedon's Road, there's an accident. Investigation work is on the scene, and the road has closed as this hour. Eastbound 44 from Antire, 141, that incident's been cleared. In both directions, 170 at Midland, that incident's been cleared. But northbound traffic is slowing near Page, and southbound is slowing near Natural Bridge. Eastbound 70 at Highway 143 in Pocahontas, Illinois, there's reports of an overturned vehicle that's over on Madison County side. Northbound 270 at 44 is slow this hour. Eastbound 40 from Long Road to Clarkson, look for no problems reported. Eastbound 70 from 79 through Mid Rivers Mall, expect normal traffic. Westbound 270 at Newhalls Ferry and Graham Hanley, everything's on the move. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Bridge paving operations have the right center lane closed. There's no delays, just a little slow this hour. The Eats Bridge is closed until Wednesday for the Eats Bridge event. and eastbound 40 under the Poplar Street Bridge. There's paving operations there, so use caution. All your other approaches into downtown look pretty good this hour. And Lenore K. Sullivan Boulevard is closed in both directions from Washington through Poplar Street Bridge 4. The Fair St. Louis Memorial is also closed to Market, Walnut, Chestnut, and Pine. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Try Sonic's tasty and hearty bacon, egg, and cheese breakfast burrito. Make it a combo with Sonic's classic tots or fries and a regular coffee or soft drink. Breakfast at Sonic, it's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Hot and partly cloudy today. A chance of showers this afternoon. High in the mid-90s this evening. Partly cloudy in the morning, partly cloudy until morning, then becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. There's a 40% chance of showers. Low in the mid-70s. On Independence Day, not quite as warm. Showers and thunderstorms are likely. High in the mid-80s. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the lower 80s. Currently, we have 77 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 79. Stay tuned for more of either the best of the wake-up call or Irene J. Smith. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this go? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this go?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
It's time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. People who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you pick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
We struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal
citizenship. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Well,
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. Don't forget, the Wake Up Call, my shows are archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. Do not forget, I'm also podcast there. And we are streamed at WGNU.net, so you can get to us every kind of way. And I've given you my digits, so handle your business. I often sit in this chair here as a woman of African descent, as a talk show host, as a writer, as an attorney. I sit in this chair and I talk to you every day, 4 hours every day. And from the perspective of who I am, what I've learned, the training that I've had, I look at the amazing place that this country is and the amazing times that we find ourselves in. We live at a time where, as the kids say, out your mouth. The highest levels of government, out their mouths, lobbied members of the United States Senate in order to get members of the United States Senate to just say yes to torture. To torture! To torture! The guy that sits in the president's seat in the White House was insisting upon the ability to be able to torture human beings. This is mind-numbing. And what is even crazier, as if that's not textbook crazy enough, there are American citizens out there that deny that this country would ever engage in any kind of torture. They throw up their hands and they say, huh? Not here. Other countries, other societies say, when they deal with a legacy of torture, they say never again. Apparently, from the mindsets of Americans, our mantra is never before. We've never done this before. Huh. I'm a woman of African descent. I know what this country is capable of. And we need to put some specifics to that. We have joining us this morning from Madison, Wisconsin, one of my favorite cities, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, Alfred McCoy, and he has written a book, A Question of Torture. Alfred McCoy, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
Fine.
Very good. Did torture just start with, let's say, John McCain when he... Oh, no. Did torture just start recently in the United States?
No. What you're seeing right now is the legacy of 50 years of torture research and propagation by the CIA. Let's start with the photographs, because a whole bunch more of them were just released last week by Australian television, by Salon.com.
Abu Ghraib.
Yep, the photographs from Abu Ghraib of the people with the bags on their heads, their arms extended, all that. Let's start with the most famous, the most iconic of all those photos, that one of the Iraqis standing in a box, hooded, arms extended, with fake electrical wires hanging from his arms. Now, when that photo came out in 2004, William Sapphire, writing in the New York Times, said creeps. Other people said hillbillies from Cumberland, Maryland. I looked at that photo, and I saw systematic torture. The Iraqi was hooded for sensory disorientation, and his arms were extended for self-inflicted pain. Those are the two signature, the two trademark torture techniques developed by the CIA during the 1950s. From 1950 to 1962, the CIA led a massive mind control project, a kind of Manhattan Project of the mind, spending up to $1 billion a year to crack the code of human consciousness. And then what they came up with was this new form of torture, psychological torture, the first real revolution in this cruel science of pain in centuries.
And who did they start with? What type of people did they start with?
Well, there were two strands to the research. One was the sort of secret in-house research. A lot of people have heard about the drug experiments, experimenting with marijuana, hashish, mescaline, and above all, LSD. CIA ran a whole bunch of in-house LSD experiments and even got outrageous. At one point, they had party houses in San Francisco and New York, and they had San Francisco prostitutes going out, picking up customers, lacing their drinks with LSD, and then photographing the reaction on the Johns. All that exotic drug research led nowhere, except the lawsuits. Didn't work at all. Didn't produce any useful information, any useful techniques. What did work was that they outsourced the boring, mundane behavioral science research to the leading universities and the most brilliant behavioral scientists of their generation, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, McGill. And the first big breakthrough, the first real discovery, came in the early 1950s at McGill University in Montreal. And there, a very famous psychologist named Dr. Hebb found that he could induce a state akin to acute psychosis in just 48 hours. Now, what did he do? Electroshock, hypnosis, LSD? No, none of the above. All he did was have student volunteers, well-paid, sitting in an air-conditioned cubicle with goggles, gloves, and earmuffs. First they hallucinated, then they suffered breakdown. If you look at the photographs of those student volunteers from the early 1950s, they look just like the detainees at Guantanamo. Look at those photographs carefully from Guantanamo. The people got gloves on, they've got earmuffs, and they got blackened goggles. That's it. That's sensory disorientation. It will induce a complete breakdown in 48 hours. The next thing they did, CIA had two top neurologists at the Cornell University Medical Center in New York City study the Soviet KGB torture techniques. And these two eminent neurologists concluded that the most brutal techniques used by the KGB did not involve beating, but instead just involved ordering a victim to stand immobile, arms outstretched, for days at a time, while fluids flowed to the leg. Sores formed. Those sores suppurated. The kidneys shut down. Hallucinations started. Incredibly painful. And the CIA then took these two basic techniques, sensory disorientation and self-inflicted pain, and they codified them into a so-called curiously named QBARC counterintelligence interrogation manual. And they released that internally in the intelligence community in 1963, and they spent the next 30 years, right up to the early 1990s, propagating these torture techniques worldwide to allied armies and police forces across Latin America and across Asia. And if people want to get the manual, and you can do it, just go to your computer and Google and type in K-U-B-A-R-K, and be sure you read the footnotes, because that's where you find the behavioral scientific research actually discussed.
And there's another way of phrasing this. Isn't it called no-touch torture?
Yeah, it is, because in effect it's counterintuitive. For 2,000 years, torture was a formal part of Western judicial proceedings from ancient Greece, particularly ancient Rome, medieval Europe, right up until the 18th century, all right? And that torture always involved the most brutal kinds of torture imaginable, physical torture. Hot irons, the rack, the wheel, the iron maiden, things like this. You know, just iron implements to pull and tear and puncture the body, all right? And the thing about this torture, the CIA's torture, is it leaves no scars. In fact, this CIA psychological torture paradigm is extraordinarily perverse. It is elusive, resilient, adaptable, and destructive.
Leaves no trail.
That's the elusive part. Right now, there are over 100 torture treatment centers across the world, and if somebody is physically tortured, They can be medically examined, and they can make a medical and then legal determination that torture has taken place. It's very clear. It's open and shut case. A torturer will go to jail if he or she can be prosecuted. But the psychological torture leaves no trace. So it's elusive. And even when people investigate, they disagree about what actually constitutes severe psychological pain because it's all so subjective, in the mind of the victim and in the eyes of the investigator. The second thing is that it's resilient. Psychological torture is wrapped in this society in all kinds of euphemisms. It has a kind of appealing scientific gloss that makes it quite acceptable to policymakers in Washington. And the idea that it's not brutal and physical makes it palatable to the American public. And we call this torture light, okay? That distinctive American euphemism for it. So in this country, we don't think that torture is really, that psychological torture is really torture. But in fact, the medical evidence, and it's clear, the medical evidence says that psychological torture is far more painful, inflicts far more lasting damage on the victim than does physical torture. The Center for the Torture Victims in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the oldest center for treatment of torture victims in the United States, has 8,000 cases right now. And they've concluded from their 8,000 cases that, and this is based on actually trying to treat and help people, that it's far harder to treat and cure somebody who's been subjected to psychological torture than it is to treat and cure somebody who's been subjected to physical torture.
And why is that?
Because the physical torture is once it actually starts, no matter how horrific the violence, is less painful. It's known than the fear of it. It's the fear, okay? It's also there are techniques that simulate death. So when you're being physically tortured, you're suffering pain, but you're alive. But one of the tactics and techniques of psychological torture is to simulate death. The most common CIA technique is a thing called waterboarding. Now, when the head of the CIA, Portergos, testified in front of Congress late last year, he called waterboarding a professional interrogation technique. After the U.S. Senate last December supposedly banned torture, the Justice Department, under Antonio Gonzalez, anonymously released information to the Washington Post saying that as far as they were concerned, this congressional prohibition did not prohibit waterboarding. Now, waterboarding is a cruel medieval torture technique that's actually been revived by the CIA because it's actually, although it doesn't leave physical scars, let me explain what it is. Waterboarding is you lie the victim down and you elevate the feet above the head. And you then pour water down the throat and you fill up the lungs. And the victim thinks that they're drowning. The body actually thinks it's drowning because you are. Your lungs are filled with water, even though you're high and dry. Your mind has this terrible fear of death. And it is the mind telling the body that it's dying, and it is one of the most incredibly painful tortures imaginable. And then they simply pound on the lungs and you vomit out the water and you're alive. But you've thought you've died. And the CIA uses this as a technique. Now, the American Justice Department today says that this is not torture. I have in my possessions a book I cite in my book, published in 1541 in Paris. Okay? Now, back in the 1500s, they knew their torture. And this is called, they actually have an engraving of this exact same technique with a magistrate sitting before a victim. Mm. And there's a pitcher pouring water down his throat, and the plate is labeled Torturae Gallicae Ordinariae, in Latin, translated, standard French torture. Now, in the 16th century, 400 years ago, they called that torture. Today, the U.S. Justice Department says, no, not torture.
And how do they, aside from saying it's not, is there a definition that they provide of torture that this doesn't fit into?
Yes, exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. You said you're an attorney, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. Okay, you learned something in law school more than how to write contracts. Yes, indeed. It's all a matter of the legal definitions. Look, in 1994, when President Clinton sent the UN Anti-Torture Convention to Congress for ratification, he accompanied that ratification with four detailed paragraphs of what are called reservations. That means we ratify this treaty except, or we will follow the treaty and we'll do everything except, okay? Now, those four detailed paragraphs of reservation were all focused on one word, just one word in the 26 printed pages of the UN Anti-Torture Convention. And that word was mental. Basically, what we did is we said we accept that physical torture is torture. But then they wrote these reservations in a way that exempted the CIA's torture techniques with this sensory disorientation and self. Self-inflicted pain, exempted that from the effect of the UN treaty. So in effect, we stretched the boundaries of what constitutes psychological torture. That's why when Condoleezza Rice, late last year, went to Europe and said, you know, we don't torture, and President Bush says, we don't torture, there should be a little footnote that says, torture as defined by the reservations to the UN Anti-Torture Convention as passed by Congress in 1994. So we say we don't torture, because we mean we don't engage in physical torture, and the Europeans, the UN, indeed the rest of the world, says, no, you do torture because psychological torture is torture.
And isn't there also physical torture that we do as well?
Well, one of the problems of this, okay, is that once you open the door, okay, you fall down the slippery slope, and let me explain how and why. Torture is one of those things we don't understand. Sure, we know the techniques, but we don't understand how it destroys the victim, and we, above all, don't understand the perverse appeal that it has to the perpetrators. From my work with perpetrators, and I've interviewed a fair number of torturers, particularly in the Philippines, where I did much of my work. I looked at the transmission of the CIA torture technique to the Philippines and wrote a book about that before my current book. And what I found was that the torture is a transactional experience, that when you're dealing with the innocents in particular, it will inflict scars that can damage a human psyche, sometimes destroy it for life, okay? And in equal measure, just as the victim's mind and ego is destroyed, the ego and the psyche of the perpetrator is inflated, and they emerge empowered, Nietzschean supermen, who think that they can sweep all before them, and they never repent, they never apologize, they feel no shame, they feel no guilt. And that's, I think, and this is speculative, I think the torture taps into some deep, uncharted recess of the human mind where the capacity for procreation and destruction all coincide. And I think it has a powerful, almost erotic appeal to both the perpetrators and, above all, to the powerful who order the torture to take place.
Do we find that most of these torturers are men?
Yes, but not exclusively.
And I need you to hold that thought, please. We have to take a break. I am talking to Alfred McCoy. He is the author of A Question of Torture. He's a professor of history at University of Wisconsin in Madison, and he's joining us from Madison. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us. We have to take a break.
Grandma's hands used to hand me
Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU following the traffic, the weather, and this break. Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Chevy 72-hour sale. Southbound 94 at Freedon's Road, there's an accident investigation team, and the road is closed at this hour. Eastbound 44 at Antire and 141, no problems to report there. Eastbound 44 at Bowles and Merrimack River Bridge looks good. Westbound 270 at Illinois 3 and Canal Bridge, no problems there. Northbound 270 at 44, everything is on the move. And westbound 270 at New Halls Ferry and Graham Hanley looks good. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. There's paving operations. Right center lane is closed. The Eads Bridge is closed through Wednesday for the Eads Bridge celebration. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Chevy 72-hour sale. Chevy 72-hour sale is going on now. Hurry, time's running out on amazing deals from Chevy. Don't wait, the clock's ticking. The Chevy 72-hour sale ends July 5th. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Hot, partly cloudy today. Chance of showers this afternoon, high in the mid-90s. This evening, partly cloudy until early morning, becoming mostly cloudy. Another chance for showers and thunderstorms, low in the mid-70s. For Independence Day, not quite as warm. Showers and thunderstorms likely, high in the mid-80s. And Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently, we have 79 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 79 degrees as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. Actually, it's the best of. Liz will be back with us on Wednesday. Until then, enjoy this best of the Wake Up Call segment right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Hello, my name is Henry Wonderful. I'm running for state representative in the 71st District. On August 8, 2006, I need your support. Here's Major Harris to tell you the kind of person I am.
My name is Major Harris at Hair Commanders. As my client came in the salon, I asked different ones about him. Some he had worked with, I think, as a teacher. They was telling me how he tried to help everyone. Then he worked, I think, as the welfare officer. One lady had worked with him there. And they said that he always was trying to help someone. I would support him.
This ad was paid for citizens to elect Henry Wonderful, state representative.
Does your life need to be energized? Are you in need of some direction and clarity? Is your stuff dragging you down?
Tune into Sort It Out with Lori and Claire, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. We'll help you find the courage to make a change in your life.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920, WGNU.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson, inviting you to join me every Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. You'll hear stories of people just like you who are overcoming obstacles and making the difference in the lives of others. You're invited to share your thoughts. You know people are what matter most to me, and I enjoy talking with you and helping you reach your highest goals. Join me for the Laurie Fulkerson Show, Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. We're here to discuss what matters most to you.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake-Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number is 1-877-920-WGNU. I am talking to Alfred McCoy. He is the author of A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. He is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, and he's joining us from Madison. Welcome back.
Thank you, Liz.
We were talking about men versus women as torturers.
Yeah, I think what we're finding is that probably men are more inclined to do it, but that women, it turns out, are actually some very effective and lethal torturers at all levels, both actual interrogators and also commanders. And as the women are more and more in the military, it turns out that they can do this as well. But we don't have enough information on what the differences will be.
Well, would we call the woman that was with the two thumbs up, Lindsay, would we call her a torturer? Would she?
Oh, yeah, she was haplessly, kind of in. Yeah, she was in the system. What they were doing. When you look at those Abu Ghraib photographs, what you see in there is you see the two tiers of the CIA torture paradigm. Let me explain. As I said earlier, that paradigm is adaptable, and every extended application produces innovation. Now, it's been revived since 2001 for the War on Terror, and what's happened is Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense, turned Guantanamo into a kind of a torture laboratory, a behavioral science laboratory. He appointed a man named General Jeffrey Miller to be commander. And General Jeffrey Miller began experimenting with expanded interrogation techniques. Now, the original CIA torture paradigm is an assault on sensory receptors, the universal sensory receptors that every human being has, sensitivity to light and dark, to silence and noise, to food or lack of food, and sense of time, and also to simple physical pain. So, what they did at Guantanamo was they experimented to customize and to increase the force of the paradigm, and they played around cultural sensitivity, and they discovered Arab sensitivity, cultural sensitivity to issues of gender and sexuality, and also fear of dogs. And then they went further. General Miller ordered the creation of what were called behavioral science consultation teams, and they had actual trained psychologists participating in the interrogation, not trying to help the victims, but to increase the intensity of the breakdown, to basically inflict pain upon them. These are qualified health professionals that are inflicting pain on people that should be patients. Okay. Now, what they found was individual weaknesses in psyche, such as attachment to mother or fear of dark, and they put the three together to create a three-tier lethal psychological torture technique: attack on sensory receptors, second, attack on cultural sensitivity, and third, attack on individual psyches. The result is then a perfection of the CIA's psychological torture paradigm. Now, this was developed at Guantanamo, and it reached Abu Ghraib two ways. One, that there was a military intelligence unit, the 519th, that was based in Bagram, and they were inside the joint military CIA interrogation center at the old air base. And their military intelligence officers at all levels learned CIA torture techniques as they worked alongside with them. That unit was then transferred in July 2003 to Abu Ghraib, and that unit that came from Bagram, where they killed two prisoners, tortured them to death, that unit set up the basic interrogation doctrine at Abu Ghraib. Then, in August 2003, as the Iraqi insurgency was starting, we had no intelligence, General Miller flew in from Guantanamo, and he brought with him all of the advanced torture techniques he developed at Guantanamo. And he gave them to the U.S. commander for Iraq, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez. And General Sanchez issued a series of orders for expanded interrogation techniques beyond those allowed in the U.S. Army Field Manual. And those techniques are basically two tiers of the CIA paradigm. One, self-inflicted pain. Two, sensory disorientation. And three, attack on Arab cultural sensitivity, particularly to dogs. They brought in a canine unit, a dog unit, and they used the dogs to attack this imagined Arab male cultural sensitivity to dogs. So when you look at all those Abu Ghraib photos, and you get beyond the revulsion, okay, I mean, they're really disgusting, okay, they're repulsive, and we should be repulsed. Now, it's my job to actually get kind of clinical about it. I don't like it, but I have to do it. I look at those photos, and you look at it, and what you see is a lot of people are in uncomfortable positions. They're crouching, or they're standing straight upright with their arms extended, or in one of the new photos, the man is short shackled. His arms are high behind his back, and he's shackled to, looks like, a door lock.
And there's also one that is hung upside down from a bed.
Yeah, that's right. That's another. Those are all stress positions, okay? That's self-inflicted pain. The other thing you'll see in the photos is everybody's hooded. Now, that's the denial of light. That's sensory deprivation, sensory disorientation. And if you read the more detailed descriptions of what goes on at Guantanamo and at Abu Ghraib, in the sensory realm, what they're doing is that they do denial of sensory stimulus. That's to say, you're put in a dark room, and then you get a surfeit, an excessive sensory stimulus. You're put before bright lights or strobe lights. You're denied all sound, and then suddenly lots of rock music. So it's sensory denial, sensory excess, sensory denial, sensory excess. And they play this, and they intermingle some stress positions. They give you some dogs. They strip you naked. He has a little faked simulated sexuality. I mean, they scramble it all up, and it's the genius, the art of this, the perverse art of this, is to somehow coordinate this in a way that breaks the person down.
What do they get? What is the result of all of this?
Well, that's a very good question. You generally get very bad information. What we found time and time again, look, in the 3rd century A.D., 1,800 years ago, a Roman jurist named Ulpian wrote a commentary on legal procedures in Rome. And at that point, any slave brought before a Roman court had to be tortured. Otherwise, it was felt that a slave's testimony was unreliable without torture. So Roman jurists had lots of experience of torture. And Ulpian said, look, he said, torture is a difficult and dangerous thing. The strong will resist and the weak will say anything to end the pain. And that's what we found. At the start of the war on terror, the CIA took control of a man named Al Libby, and they waterboarded him, the technique I talked about earlier, and they used other of these techniques on him, and he then gave evidence or gave information stating that Al-Qaeda had received training in chemical and biological weapons, weapons of mass destruction from Saddam Hussein's government. In February 2003, to his undying shame, Colin Powell, Secretary of State Colin Powell, went before the United Nations, and he said, we have reliable, verified intelligence that Al-Qaeda has received training in chemical and biological warfare from Saddam Hussein's government. That's one reason why we got to invade this country. Now, a year later, early 2004, the CIA issued an internal report branding this same man, Al-Libby, a fabricator, all right, and saying that all of the information he'd given was unreliable. And the reason it was unreliable, by the way, and the CIA didn't say this, was because it had been tortured out of him. So, yes, we get information. Now, look, one thing we have to realize is, I think, behind all great crimes, and what the Bush administration has done on torture, I would consider a crime. Behind all great crimes, there lies an even greater crime, and that's human stupidity. This was all stupid. This did not have to happen. I've argued, and I argue in my book, A Question of Torture, that psychological torture is a distinctively American form of torture. But there's another distinctively American form of torture called empathetic interrogation. Now, this was a technique that was developed by the U.S. Marine Corps during World War II in the Pacific Campaign. Now, back then, we thought the Japanese were fanatics, that they believed in the divinity of the emperor, that they would never break, and that, by God, if we wounded them on the battlefield, a lot of soldiers felt that you had to shoot them dead because they would rise almost from the dead to bite you or throw a grenade at you or something, you know. Everything we think about Al-Qaeda today, we thought about the Japanese soldiers back then. The U.S. Marine Corps found with empathetic interrogation, that's to say, interrogators fluent Japanese could pick up soldiers on islands like Tinian and Saipan, and in 24 hours have that most difficult form of intelligence, complete order of battle intelligence on the Japanese army on those islands within 24 hours by just talking to them empathetically. Now, the FBI, after World War II, adopted this technique, and they perfected it. So, when the Al-Qaeda bombed our embassies in East Africa in the 1990s, the FBI was the lead agency. They made the arrests. They did empathetic interrogation. They extracted some of our best intelligence about Al-Qaeda. They brought these people before courts of law, U.S. federal courts, where they confessed to their crimes, and they're now in U.S. federal prisons. It worked. But at the start of the war on terror, when the FBI, as it had had for the previous 60 years, 1942 to 2002, they had charge of counterintelligence. The Bush administration knew the FBI will not and would not torture, so they lost control of counterintelligence. They lost control of the Al-Qaeda captives. And the Bush administration gave those Al-Qaeda captives to the CIA because the CIA has and will torture.
What? And we have to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about oversight. Has there been any oversight of this in anybody's administration? I'm Liz Brown. I'm talking to Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, Alfred McCoy, and he is the author of A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I'll be back after this break. Please stay with us.
Liz Brown is on vacation till Wednesday. Until then, we will bring you more of the best of the wake-up call. Irene J. Smith will be sitting with us in the 8 o'clock hour, as well as tomorrow. As well as on Wednesday for a bit. Until then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. Learn how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. That's Design 411 at noon, Wednesdays on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger. Listen to me Wednesday, July 5th, when my guest will be Nathan Muller. Ever heard of the NAFTA Superhighway? You will if you tune in. That's the Sloan Ranger Show, Wednesday, July 5th at 5 p.m., right after the fireworks, only on WGNU.
Hi, this is Judy Moskov. Join me for A Gardener's Notebook every Monday at noon. We'll be talking with gardening experts and sharing information that you need to know. Get the latest dirt on everything from tomatoes to trees. That's A Gardener's Notebook every Monday at noon.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake-Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to the author of A Question of Torture, Alfred McCoy. He's a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, and he's joining us from Madison, Wisconsin. And Alfred McCoy, oversight. Has there been any kind of oversight to this torture?
Yes, there has. It's not been successful. Over the past 30 years, Congress has conducted four major investigations into CIA torture or manifestations thereof. And Congress has tried on three occasions now, to prohibit torture. In each case, with the investigations, what happens is the press exposes, Congress investigates, there's no response from the public, and it tends to fade away. The prohibitions have been even more problematic, and the latest, of course, is last December. We can talk about that. But what happens in each case is Congress discovers some abuse. In the early 1970s, it was that the U.S. Office of Public Safety, which was a U.S. government aid program training police across the world, that they were engaged in torture training in Brazil. So Congress destroyed that office, destroyed that program, zeroed it out in the budget and wiped it off the books. And then, of course, in the mid-1994, Congress ratified the UN Anti-Torture Convention, but they did so in ways that allowed torture to continue, because Congress basically prohibited physical torture but didn't prohibit psychological torture, at least completely. And they left a little loophole there. Most recently, what's happened is that beginning in July last year, Senator McCain introduced an amendment to the defense appropriation that contained language that would prohibit any cruel or inhumane treatment of detainees anywhere in the world by any U.S. government official. That meant either a military officer or a CIA interrogator. And the Bush administration, in a brilliant exercise in political manipulation, twisted that prohibition of torture into, in fact, a kind of legalization of the controversial doctrines that the Bush White House had used to justify torture for the previous 3 years under the War on Terror. And it was very skillful the way the White House did that. And if you want, I can explain how they did it.
If you could.
Oh, sure. Okay, look, at the start of the War on Terror, the White House came up with, right at the start of the War on Terror, on September 11, 2001, President Bush addressed the nation, our shaken nation, right after the attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. And then, once the cameras were turned off, he turned to his counterintelligence officers inside the White House and he said, "I don't care what the international lawyers say, we are going to kick some ass." That's a quote. And for the next few months, the White House legal staff and lawyers in the Justice Department worked to translate the president's otherwise unlawful orders into legal doctrine. And to do this, they came up with three controversial legal arguments. First, that the president, as commander-in-chief and the head of the so-called unitary executive, has the authority to override all laws and treaties. Second, and this was done by the Justice Department, second, that should CIA interrogators be charged legally, charged before the courts with torture, that there is a defense, and they came up with two defenses. The first one went to intention. If a CIA interrogator inflicted pain, but his intention was information, not pain, then he could walk out of court. He had a defense. Second, what is pain? The UN and U.S. UN Anti-Torture Convention, U.S. law, defines torture as the infliction of severe, severe psychological or physical pain. Now, what does severe mean? Mm-hmm. In a notorious memo, the Assistant Attorney General, Jay Bybee, who's now a federal judge, said that from his reading of the law, that this pain could be right up to organ failure, okay, which meant right up to the point of death.
And he's a judge now.
He's a judge for life in the federal court system. He rewarded, like all these perpetrators, with promotions. That's a process of impunity, but that's another topic. The third controversial legal doctrine was put forward by another Justice Department employee, And that was very simple, that Guantanamo was not U.S. territory, and thus we could confine the detainees at the U.S. naval base on Guantanamo, and they would be beyond the courts. Now, last summer, when McCain introduced his prohibition on torture as an amendment to the defense bill, the Bush White House, first of all, fought it with loopholes. They sent Dick Cheney, the vice president, to Capitol Hill to jawbone McCain to get him to withdraw the bill, and McCain refused. Then Cheney sat down with McCain and said, look, you got to write an exemption for the CIA. You got to exempt them so that the CIA is allowed to torture. And again, Senator McCain refused. So then the White House, they leaned on McCain and they got the first thing. They got him to write in an amendment or a revision to his amendment in which he said that there was a possible defense of CIA interrogators accused of torture, again on this grounds of intention. If they did something illegal, but it had not been their intention to do so, they were not, they thought that the orders to do it were legal, then they can walk, okay? Mm-hmm. The next thing was the presidential doctrine. When President Bush signed that McCain's bill into law on December 30th, Friday before New Year's, he sent out an email at 8 o'clock on a Friday night before New Year's, nobody noticed it, in which he said that I'm signing this legislation, but let me make it my intention clear that as commander-in-chief and as head of the unitary executive, this bizarre neoconservative concept, the unitary executive, I reserve the right to do whatever needs to be done to defend America. In other words, I'll torture if I have to.
If I want to.
If I want to. And then the third thing. As the Bush White House was filling this bill with loopholes, they got a movement conservative, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, to amend McCain's amendment. And what Senator Graham does, he amended it to say that for the purposes of this legislation, the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, is not U.S. territory.
Mm.
So that meant that, in effect, Guantanamo was beyond the reach of U.S. law and U.S. courts. And then Senator Graham added one thing that's the ultimate abomination, I think. He stated that, you know, those military tribunals in Guantanamo, which are right now hearing the cases, the evidence, much of it tortured, extracted from interrogation, coercive interrogation the International Red Cross has deemed to be torture, that the UN has deemed to be torture. All right, as they evaluate that evidence, if they impose a penalty of more than 10 years, and in all likelihood they will on most of the people that appear before them, then the detainees can appeal, a one-time appeal, to the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, and this is the critical part, the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia can consider coerced evidence. They can consider the probative value of tortured testimony. Now, the U.S. Congress has passed a law which, to my reading of things, is a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which was adopted by our founding fathers back in 1791, at a time when the Enlightenment was mounting a major campaign for the prohibition of torture. And as a part of that Enlightenment campaign, the founding fathers wrote into the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment, saying that nobody can self-incriminate. We have the right not to incriminate ourselves in court of law. Now, who incriminates themselves in a court of law? The only circumstances in which that occurred in the 18th century world, somebody who'd been tortured would incriminate themselves. So, in effect, this is a specific prohibition in the U.S. Constitution against torture and against the consideration of tortured testimony by a U.S. court. Now, in that law, the Detainee Treatment Act 2005, passed by the U.S. Congress last December, signed by President Bush on December 30th, there is a provision for a U.S. Federal Court of Appeals to consider the probative value to decide whether or not to use torture testimony.
And that has to be the last word. Professor, thank you so much. And where can people get your book?
If they want, they can go online to Amazon.com, and you get a 30% discount. It brings it down to about $15, which for a 300-page book is not bad.
It's incredible. A Question of Torture. Alfred McCoy, Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, thank you so much.
Liz, thank you. You were a great interviewer. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
I think I'm hearing revolution. Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how
can you deserve? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
That matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. The Iraqi government has its new most wanted list, and the man who's believed to be the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq is nowhere near the top. Abu Ayyub al-Masri is down at number 31. Former White House counterterrorism chief Richard Clark, now an ABC News consultant, isn't surprised.
It's mainly people from outside Iraq. Whereas, as the most wanted list reflects, most of the people we really have to worry about are former Saddam regime officials.
The U.S. military is looking into another alleged incident of violence, meanwhile, against an Iraqi civilian by U.S. troops.
The Washington Post reports it was a 15-year-old girl who was allegedly raped and murdered by U.S. soldiers in Iraq last March, and that she had been scared for a while by the soldiers' advances. U.S. military officials say they had the victim's ages 20, but they've released few other details. At least three soldiers are under investigation in the alleged brutal rape and murder of a woman in south-central Iraq 4 months ago and the killing of three relatives in their home.
ABC's Luis Schiavone in Washington. Will the third time be the charm? NASA hopes so, with another attempt to launch the shuttle Discovery set for tomorrow.
Now, there are no technical issues holding up this launch. There have been some minor problems with a thruster that helps control the shuttle's movement in orbit and also with a fuel sensor, but that will not scuttle the launch. The big question still remains, what's going to happen to the foam? It's on the external tank. Will any dangerous pieces break off on liftoff? NASA is betting that won't happen.
ABC's Lisa Stark at the Kennedy Space Center. Nissan and General Motors are talking about a possible alliance. A major GM shareholder says the troubled American car maker needs to do something drastic to get back in the black. It's going to take a couple days to determine who won Mexico's presidential election. It's so close right now that both major candidates are declaring victory. Fewer than 300,000 votes separate them at this point. A new study says more people are buying fireworks and more people are being hurt using them. This is ABC News.
Get out of debt and get on with your life. Agencies offering Care One credit counseling services can help. If you have $4, $6, $10,000 in credit card bills, find out how quickly your debt can be paid off. Callers save an average of 30% in payments every month. So gather your bills and call now for a personal debt analysis. Licensing details available. That's Care One Credit Counseling Services, 1-800-695-9092. That's 1-800-695-9092.
Hear the acclaimed Bose Wave music system. It's elegantly small, and it brings new life to music. Forbes FYI says it sounds like a system that costs five times more. And now there's an optional multi-CD changer for hours of uninterrupted music. Call 1-800-611-1617 for a 30-day risk-free trial. Ask about making low monthly payments using your own major credit card. Order by August 31st and you'll receive a free premium backlit remote with large illuminated buttons of $40 value. Call 1-800-611-1617.
Utah County's found a dirt-cheap way to deal with the weed problem. Here's ABC's Chuck Sievertson.
Officials in Logan, Utah say they've stopped using machinery or chemicals to kill non-native weeds that invade and choke off native plants. They've switched to a natural, more effective, and cheaper alternative.
Dad, we have a bug.
Beetles.
1, 2, 3, 5!
No, not that kind. Ah, why not? They bought 2,000 beetles at $1 each. The insects attack and kill the weeds. And according to one official, they work 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, and basically for free. No word, though, why that would be a concern in a place called Cache County. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Those say, can you sing? Actually, most of us can't belt out the Star-Spangled Banner. And not only do we often hit a sour note, 61% of us don't know all of the words to our national anthem. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Here's a WGNU News update brought to you by Sonic, America's Drive-In. I'm Peyton Colston. In Belleville, police are investigating the death of a man in the Metro East. The man's body was found in a car outside Shotzi's Bar in Belleville yesterday afternoon. Authorities say the man's death is suspicious, but there's no word on the cause. The victim's name has not been released either. In other news, investigators suspect arson in a house fire in North St. Louis. It broke out yesterday on the first floor of the home on St. Louis Avenue. A police officer rescued a man trapped on an upper floor. No one was seriously hurt. It's already a deadly 4th of July holiday on Missouri highways. At least 4 people have been killed in accidents in Missouri since Saturday. One of those was 68-year-old James Thacker of St. Charles, who suffered a medical condition and crashed into a concrete barrier on the Page Avenue extension in St. Charles County Saturday morning. The scaled-back Fair St. Louis concludes tomorrow. The fair began Saturday morning with the VP Parade and continued with a performance by Jason Mraz on the riverfront. Tomorrow, Hootie and the Blowfish provide the main stage entertainment. Street closures are still in place on Leonore K. Sullivan, North Memorial Drive, and the Eads Bridge. Finally for this hour, a group of homeless veterans will rally this morning near St. Louis City Hall. The group is setting up a temporary homeless village across from City Hall and has started a petition to establish a permanent encampment. The proposed Freedom Village would be modeled after a permanent homeless village in Portland, Oregon. And that's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by Sonic. Not just good, it's Sonic good. Try Sonic's tasty and hearty bacon, egg, and cheese breakfast burrito. Make it a combo with Sonic's classic tots or fries and regular coffee or soft drink. Breakfast at Sonic. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. I'm Peyton Colston reporting for WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at the Sours traffic and weather. Sours traffic is sponsored by Ashley Furniture Home Store. Southbound 94 at Freedens Road. All roadways are reopened after a serious accident had roadways closed earlier. Westbound 270 at Illinois Route 3 and Canal Bridge. Look for no problems to report. Northbound 270 at 44 is on the move. Eastbound 70 at 79. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 at West Florissant or Washington Elizabeth all the way into 170. Look for no problems or report there. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. There's paving operations going on. The right center lane is closed. The Eads Bridge is closed until Wednesday for the Eads Bridge event. And the eastbound 40 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for paving operations. Right center lane's closed. All your approaches on the Poplar Street Bridge are looking good at this hour. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Ashley Furniture Home Store 4th of July sale. This 4th of July weekend, Ashley Furniture Home Store is offering sofas on sale for only $297. Save on select sofas, plus no interest and no payments till 2008. See store for details. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, hot, partly cloudy. Chance of showers this afternoon, high in the mid-90s. This evening, partly cloudy until early morning, then becoming mostly cloudy. Another chance for showers, low in the mid-70s. For Independence Day, not quite as warm. Showers and thunderstorms likely, high in the mid-80s. And Wednesday, partly cloudy skies, high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 81 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 80. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. Actually, it's the nice lady who's sitting in for Liz Brown. She's up next. Irene J. Smith will be filling in for Liz Brown. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Right, if you see the light, let's stand up for your rights. Good morning. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who is taking a little time off. This is the Morning Wake Up Call. We're here at WGNU. You can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net, or you can call us locally at 454-0400, or if you're long distance, and we know a lot of you are, you can call us at 877-920 WGNU, that is 877-920-9468, which means WGNU. Good morning. It's a beautiful morning out there, although it's expected to steam up. It's a little breeze in the air, which is something that it wasn't yesterday. I believe it's supposed to get up to about 96 today, so stay cool. But in the meantime, in between time, I'm here with you to talk about whatever you want to talk about. We're going to just hit a number of things this morning. Later in the hour at about 8:30, I will be joined by Alderman Charles Quincy Troop, who has introduced a resolution into the Board of Aldermen, resolution number 30, which is dealing with LRA. And as you know, many of us who live, particularly in North St. Louis, know that there are a lot of LRA property that is in our community, and quite often, sometimes next to our property. And so we want you to tune in, talk about what you think about it, and how you believe the holding of LRA property, how it impacts our community, and how it ties into the Team 4 plan. We're hoping maybe perhaps tomorrow, because tomorrow you will be listening to music on WGNU, because tomorrow is the 4th of July. But the next day, I'll be back with you from 7 to 10, and after the school watch, we'll be talking again about the impact of the Team 4 plan on our community. So again, you can reach us at 454-0400 or long distance at 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at WGNU.net. Oh, my, the lines are starting to light up this morning. Everyone is awoke. Oh, you're awoke. You're waking up. You're speaking up. This is going to be a good morning. Let's go see what the Roosevelt Man has to say early this morning. Good morning.
Well, good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Well, I guess this is in the Roosevelt, man.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
I said hello. How are you?
Okay, I was just saying, this is a motorcycle man. How are you?
Okay. Okay.
Anyhow, what I want to talk to you about is something that's rarely discussed, and that is that in the black community, from my perception, and I'm not making a blanket statement about everybody, just for the ones that it pertains to, it's been my observation that if you articulate or you speak properly, then therefore there are those that believe that you're trying to be white. Whereas I asked one of these young kids out here, I said, if I don't speak the way that you do, does that mean that I'm any less black than you are? And is a black person, what is the criteria for a black person to be accepted as being black? If should they speak like everybody else does as far as hip-hop or street jargon is concerned? And I explained to him that all black folks don't fall into a certain category like monolithic, that because your perception of black is that I have to listen to Nelly, or if I have to listen to this, that, or the other, I might like rock and roll, I might like opera, I might speak totally different than you. But I just wonder why it is that so many times when we deal with one another, we have this perception that the white man's ice water is colder and his spark plugs are hotter, and we'd rather be more critical of one another as far as doing business, but yet when we run to the white man, we have no problem spending $80 an hour to get their car fixed. Yeah, I just thought I'd throw those things at you to get your perception.
Well, it's like this. You're going to have individuals in the community, and you did preface your statement with saying that you weren't making a sweeping indictment.
Of course not.
And, of course, there are individuals that, if you speak a certain way, they will accuse you of being or sounding white, as if though all individuals who are Caucasian speak the King's English, which, of course, is not spoken in this country anyway.
Right.
So, you know, we have a lot of different things in response and in our community. We are all different. We are not just one step in lockstep with each other all the time. We are critical. We're critical of ourselves, and we're critical of others. And I think that's something that is not unique to the African-American community, but it's something that impacts all of us as humans.
You know, I would agree with you totally, but the only reason why, and you have to understand, I wasn't trying to be judgmental of black folks particularly, but I, and you're right, it's probably true of all races of people, but I just think that a lot of times we try to mimic and we try to be, I'll give you a quick classical case in point. I'm a motorcycle rider, and I noticed that a lot of the black guys that ride Harleys, they call themselves outlaws, they try to mimic the Hell's Angels, or they try to mimic a certain group of people, and rather than being themselves, as an example. Or if you have people that constantly talk about how the white man misuses his authority, yet I know black folks that do the same thing. They misuse their authority, and they take advantage of their position and get over on people, but yet they'll talk out of the other side of their neck about how the white man this, that, and the other, but yet when they do it, they don't want the spotlight put on them for misusing their authority and their position.
So you see
a lot of that.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. But I think it goes to the fact that because of our unique position in this country, and because the things that have impacted us because of the content of our color,
right,
and not the content of our character. And therefore, I think a lot of people are, I won't even use the word sensitive, but are very in tune to what we as a people, say for an example, when there is a news announcement and there's a brutal murder or there's something just horrible that has been committed by another individual, you know, and I myself have also been guilty of this, you know, I'll think to myself, Lord, please let it not be someone black.
Yeah,
you know, and so we do that. And so because of our unique position in this country, and because of our unique experience and our ancestors' unique experience in this country, I think that attributes to a lot of that. But I'm going to move on because the lines are lit up.
I appreciate it.
Okay, you be safe. Have a happy holiday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you turn down your radios, please?
The first thing I wanted to say is I haven't heard any reggae in a long time like that piece.
I left Jamaica. I heard that one.
All right.
What I wanted to ask you was, when your guest come on, Representative Troop, would you ask him to please state the people who run LRA? Because a lot of us who live in the city try to find out who was responsible for all the empty property and the neglect that's on them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to find out who was the head honcho at LRA, and we couldn't find that out.
Well, LRA, I'll tell you this, just a little background, sister. LRA is a state-created entity. It was created by the state to hold property that is foreclosed on for taxes that is not purchased at the tax sale. Say, for an example, if you get the paper tomorrow, I believe my dates are correct, they will be advertising for the sale that will be taking part, I think, the end of the month. And you can look through there, and say, for an example, those properties will be up for bid. Well, if there is no bid on the property at the tax sale, which will be conducted by the sheriff's department down by the civil courts building on the first floor, if there is no purchaser, then that property will automatically go to LRA. And under the state statute, LRA is responsible for maintaining that property. LRA is directed by a board. There are three individuals that make up that board. One is appointed by the comptroller, I believe, one by the mayor, and one by the representing the taxing authorities, the school district. They set the policy for LRA, and then there is staff that actually works for LRA. There's a director, I believe, that's appointed by the mayor.
Okay. So who is responsible for the upkeep of the property?
LRA is.
But they never do it. But if your property is not upkept, they will, kept up. They will cite you and things like that.
Yes.
And if you want to purchase a property, how many weeks or days or something like that do you have to have before you can put in business? How is that done?
Well, you go down to LRA. They have a list. They have a policy that you put in a bid. You have to go before the commission, because the commissioners actually have to approve the purchase of the property. That's some of what we're going to be talking about this morning.
Okay, great.
All righty.
Okay, thanks. Have a great one.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing today?
We're doing good. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
That's
good. You kind of hit it on the nail with the motorcycle man question, and that is pretty much if we don't have our own identity, it's only natural that we would take up someone else's identity when we take up someone else's activities. So, but yeah, I really didn't have to call because you handled it pretty good. So.
But I'm glad you called. It's good to hear your voice.
Same here, Mommy. Same here.
All right. You be safe out there.
Peace.
Peace. Good morning, career veteran.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Irene J. Smith, for taking my call. It's a pleasure, and you sound very sweet this morning. I would like to ask you, Ms. Smith, I heard on the news not long ago that I was out on the highway with the minority contractors, Eric Vickers. We got locked up over here on 71st.
And I
heard that they were...
You and Alderman Troop, he was out there, too. He was a state rep then, but he was out there, too, getting locked up.
Oh, okay, then. Well, that was my first time on steel, laying on that steel in the jail. But I heard there were 60 graduates coming out of this setup, the school that was established after we did that. And these people were supposed to get some jobs on this construction. I understand that was over $500 million worth of construction being done, all of them down these interstates and highways. I haven't seen any Afro-Americans, so I heard 60 Afro-Americans were graduating. And I would like for somebody, them to call in or you all to give some information about these classes now that they say that they would be working. So I would like to have some information on that.
And I would, too, because I think it's important that the school was established. And it's more important that these young people go to work.
Right.
you know, because quite often, and it just kind of pained me when I was driving past Burchard.
Right.
They're working on the construction of Burchard right there along the highway.
Right.
And, you know, I've driven by there at least 10 times, mm-hmm. or probably more, and I have yet to see one African-American out there working.
Yes, ma'am.
Or any other person of color for that matter, but specifically mm-hmm. an African-American out there working. And now, that's not to say that there weren't any out there working. It's just to say that I haven't seen any, and many of those who live in the area indicated they hadn't either. So your point is very well taken. So if there's someone out there that can speak to that, we certainly urge them to call in, because we want to see people working. We don't want to see, say, for an example, during the ending days of the CETA program, we had people who were trained to be screw machine operators. And, of course, anyone that knows anything about the manufacturing industry, we knew at that time that that was a dying industry, so to speak. But it was a way for some people to get some training dollars and whatnot. But there were no jobs. But in this situation, young people are being trained, and there are jobs that are available. So we certainly want to see our young people and others who also already have the skills out there working as well.
All right, Van. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
All right, and you be safe this weekend.
And I want to talk to you later about some business.
All righty.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. Liz is taking a little time off today, so you're going to have to listen to Irene J. Smith. I'm sitting in for Liz. This is WGNU. You can contact us locally, 454-0400, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at 877-920-WGNU, or you can just sit there and listen like many of you do. Have you looked outside? Have you been outside this morning? You better go outside and enjoy the weather this morning, because it's going to be quite humid and hot later in the morning. Shortly, I will be joined by with Alderman Charles Quincy Troop. We'll be talking about Resolution 30 that he has introduced into the Board of Aldermen that deals with LRA, how it handles property, how it disposes of property, and how its handling of property impacts the safety of your property. I'm going to go to the phone and talk to Ike. Good morning, Ike.
Good morning. How you doing? I ain't talked to you in a while.
How you doing?
I would be much better, but I'm so sad, and I am just tired of these young guys out here riding around and killing at night, riding by day. And I've seen one or two incidents of carjacking on the north side. I told you I'm down there all the time, me and a lot of guys with GM. And we try to talk to some of these young guys about just walking around in there, and you know you're going to get harassed or get jumped on. A lot of these kids are not bad, but what hurts me every morning, somebody dead, like already this morning. Two shootings. I mean, this is ridiculous. I talked to Ron Jones. He said, man, it's sad, but I got to put them away because they're deceased.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this doesn't make sense to me. Ron grew up together. He buried my twin brother. My brother died. The Vietnam War syndrome, my mm-hmm. twin brother. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's disheartening every day.
It is.
Night. I mean, this is what makes me sick. Of everything in this city going on, I'm tired of the young men are not even staying around to plant their seeds, to get somebody to come after them. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They ride around here just cruising in jacked-up cars, and know the men out there going to bother them, and all of them are not wrong. But we know yourself, it just ain't no safe situation for them. They know about this, how these people get popped, the police to department is not nowhere near the best. They go to court, we're just housing these workhouses and these prisons, mothers for a little $10 rider check for no one. It's just profiteering off our people, and we ain't getting nowhere.
Mm.
And that's,
your point is well taken, and you really express my sentiment when
I'm tired
I hear
of it.
I'm very tired of it, and you know, it's almost like we ought to have enough is enough is enough is enough.
And that's why I told Liz, that's why I've been calling in. I turned on the TV and I know what I'm going to hear of the weekend. And then, too, just Fox News, they report a news. They love doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so sick of these people just cooking stuff on each channel, tasting food. That is not the news. And I heard a little rumor that Fox is going to start cleaning house. I don't know whether here in St. Louis or whatever. They're going to start, he's going to clean house. But just cooking and stuff like whites been cooking for everybody. I think slaves been cooking for a long time. And what are they going to do? Cook a hot dog or a box. That don't mean jack. I bet you I ain't cooked a piece of meat in about maybe 20 years since I retired from GM. And now I'm 59, and we ain't gonna cook about us. We had to cook downtown too, you know me and you.
Yes,
we could go buy a nickel Twinkie. Your mother, everybody baked downtown. You because you didn't have nothing. You got to bake, and people think about, oh, look at this good. And white folks can't cook. I'm sorry about it.
America,
I say, I beg your pardon.
All right, Ike, I'm going to move on. You have a good holiday and be safe,
I'm going to try to give me a new Cadillac.
All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Eileen?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yes, I wanted to get a chance.
Did we catch you short?
I wanted to talk about the situation in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what came on the news about how there was an Israeli soldier that was kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but look how they framed the debate. I'm just going to go over a couple of things. When Israelis take Palestinians prisoners, they don't say that they were kidnapped. They say that they were arrested. Now, the Palestinians say they arrested this. They claim to have arrested this soldier, and they're demanding the release. You know, there are about 10,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, and they're demanding that all of the women and the children be released. But you never hear anything hardly about that. They mentioned it today on NPR. But and another thing, you hear about how Hamas that they won't they refuse to recognize Israel's right to exist. That's all you hear. This is how they frame the debate. Now, but you know, I heard a Palestinian representative on there saying that which one is worse? Irene, you are let's say you are a state and you are in existence already. Okay, I refuse to recognize your right to exist, okay? But you're already in existence.
Right.
Okay, now there's another person that's trying to come into existence, and you, Irene, are denying them the right to come into existence. Now, which one is worse? But this is how they frame the debate. And all the focus is on Hamas, how, well, they must be terrible. They want to recognize Israel. Israel is already in existence. That's a fact, okay? But the Israel will not allow a Palestinian state to come into existence. Not only that, but Israel is just as racist and an apartheid regime as South Africa was. Palestinians can't even buy land in Israel. Do you know right now that
Israel supported the South African regime.
Exactly right. And not only that, but they trade our nuclear secret. They trade our technology. They trade that. We give that to Israel, and they trade it around the world for different things like diamonds and uranium from South Africa so they can keep their bomb situation going.
Yeah, I'll let you go, brother.
Okay,
we're at the bottom of the hour.
Thank you.
We're going to be joined shortly with Alderman Truitt.
Don't give up the fight. Most people think praise God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours on earth. And now when you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah. Get up.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Eastbound 44 Chrysler and Watson looks good. Northbound 270 at 44. Look for no problems reported. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way into Mason. Everything's on the move. Eastbound 70 at 79. Look for normal traffic this hour. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Right center lane has paving operations and it's closed at this hour. The East Bridge will be closed through Wednesday for the East Bridge event, and all the other approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge at this hour are looking good this hour. No problems to report there. Everything is on the move. Lenore K. Sullivan is closed in both directions at Washington Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge. Memorial Drive is also closed to Market, Walnut, Chestnut, and Pine. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In.
Try Sonic's tasty and hearty bacon, egg, and cheese breakfast burrito. Make it a combo with classic tots or fries and a regular coffee or soft drink. Breakfast at Sonic, it's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Hot, partly cloudy. Chance of showers this afternoon, high in the mid-90s this evening. Look forward to partly cloudy skies till early morning and becoming mostly cloudy. Chance of showers and thunderstorms low in the mid-70s. Independence Day, not quite as warm. Showers and thunderstorms are likely with a high in the mid-80s. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 81 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 81 degrees. Stay tuned for more of the nice lady, Irene J. Smith, who's filling in for Liz Brown, right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Just like a well-built house needs a good design and plan, so do our lives. This is Sandy.
And this is Bobby.
Two life coaches. Please join us as we take your questions about designing your life. We'll discuss life planning, following through, and the obstacles that get in the way.
This is your weekly chance to get some answers you've been looking for. We hope you'll join us on The Design Life on WGNU every Monday afternoon from 4 to 5.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
In times of danger and disaster, in times of peace and times of war, in times of joy and times of pain, in every corner of the world and right here at home, wherever and whenever our troops are called, the USO is there. For their families, for their futures, for the incredible sacrifice they make for all of us, so that someday they can return to the people they love and the things they hold in their hearts. For all of us, it's this simple. We need them, they need us, and we need you. The USO. Until everyone comes home. To find out more about the USO and how you can help, visit USO.org.
Hi, this is George Cotton.
And this is Sil Wilson.
Hey, tune us in every Tuesday evening, 8 to 10 p.m.
for The Real Deal with George and Sil.
That's right, every Tuesday evening, 8 to 10 p.m. We'll see you there.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Fight the power, Isley Brothers. Yes, I love it all. I love every last bit of old music and a lot of the new music as well. But the old music, yes, 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 I'm old school. Yes, I am. Whoo, we got to fight the power. Fight the powers that be. And we've been talking about at the Saturday Morning Institute, one of the things that we've been talking about is the impact of the Team 4 plan on the African-American community, North St. Louis in particular. And one of the issues that has repeatedly come up with concerns is LRA. So this morning I've asked Alderman Charles Quincy Troop to join us for a discussion regarding a resolution that he introduced, resolution number 30, regarding LRA. And so I'm going to go to Charles Quincy Troop. Good morning.
Good morning, Irene J. Smith.
How are you?
Wonderful.
Well, that's good.
I woke up. I got up.
You woke up, you got up. You're able to be in the vertical position and not destined to the horizontal position. So that's
hey, you know, that's a blessing.
Yes, it is. We've been talking a little bit this morning about LRA, and I know from years and years of discussions with you regarding your concerns about LRA. It seems that since you've joined the Board of Aldermen, you're taking LRA to task, and you've introduced resolution number 30. Can you tell us what prompted you to introduce this resolution?
Well, a resolution number 30 was critical that somebody introduced a resolution that passed the Board of Aldermen unanimously. And is now assigned to Alderman Terry Kennedy's Public Safety Committee to have hearings, and I'm going to request that he have public hearings as well as having out in the community rather than having just hearings in the Board of Aldermen with the Alderman, because I think the public, especially the property owners and the people who live next door to these LRA properties, should have a right to come and testify so there could be kind of a holistic approach to addressing the LRA problem. What the resolution does is it calls on the city to try and say, when we go to LRA, then you gave an overview of LRA. Currently, you know, the mayor, the comptroller, and the Board of Education, neither one of them take ownership of the LRA properties or take the responsibility of maintaining those properties and making sure that those properties adhere to the city code. Now, the building code and the public safety building code set out certain criteria for all property in the city, including LRA's property. LRA is responsible to maintain their property under state law, but they don't do that. And the mayor and even the alderman in our hearing last week from Southside was saying, well, LRA can't possibly maintain all of their property, and that they are the only conduit available for these properties that nobody else wants to receive these properties. So they receive the properties, and then they just sit there, and they don't cut the grass, they don't cut the trees or harvest, they don't crop the trees, they don't have to adhere to the city code. Like, we have a Mr. We have a person on, I'm not going to call his name, on St. Louis Avenue, 5000. He had an LRA lot sitting next to him for over 15 years, and he couldn't buy the lot because LRA said the lot was a billable lot. So that lot set that he dumped on the lot, the criminals, the gangs, and everybody was using the lot as a thoroughfare. And he had to cut the grass and maintain the lot for 15 years, but he couldn't buy it. So I introduced, I wrote a letter to try to get him, get them to give him a lot. And, of course, they didn't want to do it, so we had a big fight. I had to go all the way to the mayor's office to get him that lot. But then when I start really looking at the lots in our ward and how it impacts the black community at whole and all of the wards, that's why I introduced the resolution, hopefully to get the other black aldermen to really look at what's happening to them. And when I look at the fourth ward, I look at the 22nd ward and the first ward, and I think we have the greatest number, and the third is just awful. when you look at our wards, we have the greatest number of these LRA properties. And if we don't do something quick to turn the tide around, I think, like I was telling the politicians, there's absolutely no way that we can ever recover. When you look at all of the money to come in because we have poor people and the housing stock the way we have, but it's spent downtown and not spent in the community. With the little money we get for...
You're speaking of block grant money?
Yeah, community block grant money.
Federal
yeah.
dollars that come in?
Mm-hmm. We'll never have enough money to rehab our communities. And the developers are saying, we're not going to come in unless you give us tax abatement. Then you've got to get some gap money. Then you've got to get tax increment financing. Then you've got to get tax abatement and a host of other criteria that the white wards don't have to have.
What do you think part of the solution to this problem is?
I think the part of the solution to the problem is, number one, we've got to hold the people that are responsible for our LRA accountable, and that is the Board of Education, who has a commissioner, the comptroller, and the mayor. You can't just put these people on the board and then just say, now, you all go do what you want to do, and I'm going to release myself, abdicate my responsibility, look at what's happening to the black community. Well, what is happening to the black community? I think we need a class action suit. The black property owners, they're losing their property value, the assessor valuation go up, but they can't get that increase in when they get ready to sell their property.
So would part of the solution be allowing property owners who are maintaining their property and adjacent to LRA lots to have the right, particularly in the situation, and I know the gentleman you're speaking with on
Singles
Avenue, yes. I mean, he tried repeatedly to get LRA lot, and he repeatedly was told it's a buildable lot. You can't have it, but you can maintain it. I mean, you can cut the grass. So we're going to take a brief break, Alderman Troop. I'm going to be back to continue the discussion about Resolution 30 dealing with LRA. Stay tuned.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in AM 920 WGNU every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, then... go do the right thing.
Hi, this is Lethea Owens with a motivational moment. If you always do what you've always done, then you will always get what you've always got. If you want something that you've never had, then you must do something that you've never done. If you always think the way you've always thought, then you will always get what you've always got. So please join me on Mondays from 1 to 2 for Motivational Mondays, where your dreams become reality on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Jim Curran, Curran Events. I'm delighted to say that Curran Events is now on Monday nights from 8 to 10 o'clock, right here on AM 920 WGNU, the station for the issues that matter most.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
Around the world, behind the story, it's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
And that's what this is about. This is about fighting the powers that be to preserve and maintain our community. We're talking with Alderman Troop about Resolution 30 that he introduced to investigate LRA and its handling and of the property that it has in its possession and its disposition of that property. And Alderman, will you take a phone call? No, when I was going off, I asked you before we go to the phone line, I asked you, would part of the solution to this problem be allowing property owners who are next to adjacent LRA property to purchase those properties?
Well,
if it's a vacant lot.
Yeah, that is something that we were demanding of the LRA board. like this man, we're saying we're not asking you to sell the property to people who are irresponsible and are not maintaining their property. But in this case, we had a man whose property was in pristine, perfect condition, and he was an asset, so he should have had a right to acquire that property for whatever he wanted to do. And for those property owners who live next door to those lots, and they're maintaining them anyway, and they're maintaining their house that meets city code and standards, yes, they should be able to purchase those properties. The other thing, Irene, what I want this study to do that I'm hoping that Alderman Kennedy would do, would look at the historic economic impact that LRA property has had on the black property owners in the city of St. Louis. They are liable for the decrease in assessed valuation, the increase or lack of black people to get reasonable insurance and having to go into the fire plan, and all of the other things that impact the property owners in the black community economically in a negative way. We have a right to sue to recoup those losses.
Now,
plus, this sets us up for Team 4, because right now, at the rate they're building downtown and the rate they're destroying properties in North St. Louis, there's no way we're going to be able to maintain all of our black aldermen in the ensuing redistricting.
Okay. The other thing, let me just play devil's advocate for a second here. LRA might take the position, look, we are under the statute, we're obligated to maintain our property, but look, we don't have the right to decide what property we will or will not receive. Under state statute, if no one purchases the property at the tax sale, we're obligated to take the property. So then how can you hold us responsible for these property that is foreclosed on for taxes and we end up with?
Well, you know, Irene, there was a lady that came in and testified at the hearing, and she was talking about how LRA spent $150,000 on this building to do roofs and everything for this popular, powerful developer. And then after they did all of the things for this historic preservation building, they took out all of the artifacts and stripped the building and then sold it. Well, if they can spend $150,000 to put on a roof for a major developer, then they can maintain these houses. And if they can't maintain the property at the level that they're maintaining the property, then they need to go back to the state like they have revised this statute. And I'm already trying to get the revised statutes, how this LRA statute has evolved over the years, so we can see what the changes were and if they ever asked for money to maintain the property, or if they took the money out of the urban development funds or the other housing funds that come into the city, where you only get a few dollars just to maintain the existing housing stock, i.e. the Healthy Homes program.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
In a way, you can...
And it also creates a climate. Because, you know, just like the gentleman you were talking about, there are so many other people in our ward just like that and throughout the city. And after a while, people just kind of get a real disgusted, you know.
Then
you have situations where, as I was talking to a developer who's actually doing some work in the first ward, he said he had bidded on some property that was next to a building that he presently owns. He went to the tax sale. He was bidding. He said then this guy started just bidding more money. And he said so he backed off to just watch. And he followed up. And the guy jacked the bid up, but then did not subsequently purchase the property. So then that property went to LRA. When in fact, so a lot of people have alleged, and I'm not suggesting that even the commissioners even know about this, but a lot of people have alleged that the city, i.e. St. Louis Development Corporation and CDA have entered into conspiratorial agreements with some developers that they will get certain properties so the developer will not have to pay what they would have had to pay if they purchased it at a tax sale.
Well, you know, that is so true, and that's why, Irene, I've stopped even looking at the tax sales properties now, because they are land banking the property. They are land banking North St. Louis. And if you can't see that, then you have to be totally blind. And what we've got to do, I don't think that we're going to stop this. I don't think that when this thing comes back, that the full Board of Aldermen will pass it without a horrendous fight, even though some of the white aldermen say they have similar problems.
Do you think it'll even get out of committee?
Well, it's already, the resolution has already been voted on by the board.
Okay. So then it's up to Terry Kennedy.
The committee's got to report something back to the board.
Well, is Alderman Kennedy inclined to hold hearings in the community where it would be more accessible to individuals who are directly impacted by LRA's property?
Well, I think Alderman Kennedy is always have been sensitive to involving black people in discussion. So I don't think that he would be in opposition. He's the chairman. He's going to have the power to make that decision. But, you know, he's not a weak person. So, yeah, I think he will hold hearings in the community. I've not officially requested it of him, but after the last board meeting, we're going to have a real full-fledged meeting that will receive testimonies from the community on the 13th of this month. So it's important.
So July 13th, would it be at 1 o'clock?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be in, I don't know which room it'll be in, but it'll be at the Board of Aldermen.
Okay, it'll be at Board of Aldermen. If they're going to take public testimony,
from homeowners and developers and other interested parties.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go to the phone lines. I think there's a caller that has a question for you. Good morning.
Good morning. I called for one item, but listening to Quincy Troop and you, Irene J., I soon formulated another question in another direction. And I'm very concerned about what Quincy Troop is alerting the community about, and certainly further discussion needs to take place, because I'm trying to really get a good handle on it. But it translates to people being denied in their community the benefits of their community, and this is happening not only in St. Louis but across the
country.
Everybody, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, right. So, you know, what form of response, you know, needs to take place, you know, in the community. I'm definitely opposed, you know, to outside interests taking the benefits, and that's what's happening across this country. I mean, if you really look at what's happening, reality in this world, you understand what's happening, because they're taking back the cities. You know, I mean, transportation to far off places is becoming more unattractive. The cost of gas, you know, when people commuted to St. Charles and beyond 20 and 25 years ago, it was pretty cool. It's not that cool now.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of redevelopment, you know, that is targeted for our communities, the inner cities, but we're not taking the benefit of it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Then you can call back in the next hour or so to with your other comment.
Okay, well, then I'll call back then, okay?
Okay, great. This issue of property that LRA, with LRA, and their unwillingness, mainly because I think of staff policies that the board, that is the LRA board, adopts. Are you all going to specifically obtain in writing what the specific policies are? Because sometimes they seem to change. And it would be good for the public to know exactly what the policy is relative to acquiring LRA property.
Well, you know, even though you have all the, you have the comptroller, you have the board of education, and you have the mayor that that appoints that board. The best that I can see, but the mayor does all of the hiring and the appointing of the staff. So when I look at all of the executives that are running LRA and CDA and LCDC and whatever, they all are controlled by the mayor's office. So when I was trying to get some information and data, whether we had a black mayor or a white mayor, the plan continued to go on. The same thing happened when Freeman was mayor. The same thing happened when Harmon was mayor. It's happening now when Slay is mayor. And it happened before Freeman became mayor. So I'm saying that there is a plan. There is a plan, and not only in this city, like the lady said before us, 80% of the black population moved from the rural areas. 50 years ago, 80% of the population was in the rural area. Now, 80% of the black population is in urban areas. And we occupy the most expensive real estate in urban areas because most of the land we occupy is close to the river. That's why in New Orleans, that land will never go back to black people where Katrina came through there and wiped out all that expensive land that blacks were sitting on. And the only reason it was not expensive is because blacks was on it. And that's the same thing happened to us in St. Louis, and we are dry. We've never had a, quote, serious flood.
Okay, well, we're reaching the top of the hour. Again, on July 13th at 1 p.m., there's going to be a hearing regarding Alderman Troop's resolution number 30 that is dealing with LRA's properties, how they are maintained, the disposition of it. So we will be putting that information out there so that it can be very well attended. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Irene.
Okay. I'll be back with you after the news. This is the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who will be back with you on Thursday.
That matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from the ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. It was bad weather the last two times, and now there is a possibility that something else could force NASA to scrub tomorrow's attempt to launch the shuttle Discovery, a crack in the insulating foam on the external fuel tank. Here's ABC's Vic Ratner.
The location where the crack has been found is near a critical pipe that carries liquid oxygen fuel from the shuttle's tank to the main engines. A source says the 4 to 5 inch long crack was discovered during a routine inspection last night. Mission managers are holding an urgent meeting to decide how to deal with the problem.
ABC's Vic Ratner. This is the first shuttle mission in about a year. Officials in Spain say more than 30 people are dead after a subway train derailed in the eastern city of Valencia. City spokesman says one car of the train derailed as it was leaving a downtown station. The military is looking into an alleged rape and murder of an Iraqi teenager by U.S. troops. Here's ABC's Luis Schiavone.
A Washington Post report puts an even more horrible spin on an alleged wartime atrocity. ABC News consultant Richard Clark says it's a real setback.
This really stokes the insurgency in Iraq, and it stokes the greater jihadi movement throughout the Islamic world.
The Washington Post reports it was a 15-year-old girl who was raped and murdered by U.S. soldiers last March in Iraq, that she'd been afraid of the soldiers for a while, and that her family was also murdered. Luis Schiavone, ABC News, Washington.
The leftist candidate says he won yesterday's Mexican presidential election. So does the conservative. It could take a couple days to determine who the voters really chose. A major GM shareholder says the cash-strapped carmaker needs to do something drastic to get back in the black, ABC's Andy Field.
France's finance minister says his country's Renault automakers meeting about whether to buy a large part of GM. In Japan, Nissan debating whether it will purchase up to 20% of GM's outstanding shares. If deals go through, GM could get a huge infusion of cash.
The Dow is up 54 points in early going, and the Nasdaq is ahead by 6. This is ABC News.
Get out of debt and get on with your life. Agencies offering Care One credit counseling services can help. If you have $4, $6, $10,000 in credit card bills, find out how quickly your debt can be paid off. Callers save an average of 30% in payments every month. So gather your bills and call now for a personal debt analysis. Licensing details available. That's Care One Credit Counseling Services, 1-800-695-9092. That's 1-800-695-9092.
Hear the acclaimed Bose Wave Music System. It's elegantly small, and it brings new life to music. Forbes FYI says it sounds like a system that costs five times more. And now there's an optional multi-CD changer for hours of uninterrupted music. Call 1-800-611-1617 for a 30-day risk-free trial. Ask about making low monthly payments using your own major credit card. Order by August 31st, and you'll receive a free premium backlit remote with large illuminated buttons of $40 value. Call 1-800-611-1617.
As we prepare to celebrate Independence Day, you might wonder how the British really feel about their former colony. ABC's Linda Alvin has more in a new poll.
It makes for some pretty depressing reading. The poll of nearly 2,000 Brits shows little respect for the current U.S. administration. 69% of those polled said their overall view of the U.S. had gone down in recent years, and President Bush's personal ratings are at rock bottom, with 43% rating his performance as terrible. On the other hand, Americans as individuals are still held in high esteem, along with some aspects of American culture. Professor Anthony King of Essex University.
Friends and The Simpsons and so on are very well thought of in the UK. People like the Disney theme parks.
King says regardless of what Brits think, he expects most Americans will probably shrug off the criticism. Linda Alban, ABC News, London. Now what's
your life is up? Rap star Lil' Kim left a Philadelphia prison this morning where she'd done almost a year for lying under oath about a gunfight she'd witnessed. She'll do the last 30 days of her sentence under home arrest. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Here's a WGNU news update brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news this morning, Metrolink service is increasing to make more room for more people trying to avoid the Poplar Street Bridge. Illinois Metrolink ridership jumped 15% in the week after construction began on the bridge. Metro will add extra light rail trips eastbound and westbound between Union Station and the Jackie Joyner-Kersee Station in East St. Louis. Elsewhere, wrongly convicted inmates in Missouri will receive financial relief for their years in prison. Governor Matt Blunt signed a bill Friday to allow for compensation for inmates who are proven innocent. The measure also continues to fund performance of DNA tests for convicted felons. The bill was in response to three exonerated people who had not been paid because of an exemption in a previous law. And finally this hour, dogs and cats need to be kept away from fireworks this 4th of July. Steve Kaufman, a spokesperson for the Animal Protective Association, says fireworks can be dangerous if pets ingest them.
Even the smallest amount of gunpowder can be toxic to your dog, so the unexploded fireworks that are out there, your dogs could get that gunpowder on their paws and lick it up. They might pick a piece up to try to chew it, and it's just not safe at all for them.
Kaufman says pets need to be kept inside during fireworks displays because the loud noises can be very scary for animals. He suggests people make sure their dogs and cats have identification on them in case they do escape in trying to get away from the loud noises made by fireworks. And that's a report of WGNU News for this hour. It's brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. An oil change can help improve your vehicle's fuel economy and dependability. And right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get Napa conventional motor oil for just $1.59 per quart. Napa, get the good stuff. I'm Peyton Colston with a report of WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Regions Bank. Northbound 55 at Virginia, look for a disabled vehicle. Westbound 44 from Murdoch to Elm, there's a disabled vehicle reported there as well. There's a number of various projects going on for the most part. Road projects, so just use caution as you roll up into those areas. Northbound 270 at 40, there's bridge maintenance operations. The main one is westbound 5570 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for the right center lane closed due to paving, and the East Bridge will be closed through Wednesday for the East Bridge celebration. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Regions Bank. Is your money working hard enough for you? A better rate on your money market account from Regions Bank will help with our relationship money market. Come in and see any branch or call 1-800-REGENS to see how your money can work harder for you. Regions Bank, member FDIC. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, hot, partly cloudy, chance of showers this afternoon, high in the mid-90s this evening. Partly cloudy until early morning, becoming mostly cloudy. Chance of showers with a low in the mid-70s. Independence Day, not quite as warm. However, showers and thunderstorms are likely with a high in the mid-80s. And Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 81 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 85 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Irene J. Smith filling in for Liz Brown. It's the Nice Lady Show. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Come away with me in the night. Come away with me and I will write you a song. Come away with me. Come away where they can't tempt us with their lies.
I thought you might like to hear a little Nora Jones. Ooh, that young lady can sing. This is the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who's taking a little time off. If you want to reach us, you can call 454-0400. Or you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Or you can call us long distance at 1-877-920-WGNU. I'm going to go to Scott. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Irene. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I sent you a message, and I'm going to put you on the speaker. I sent you a message, Irene, that you better stop telling the truth. You know, I'm sitting here with your brother this morning.
Okay.
And I just want, you know, but you keep on doing what you're doing. I just put a little fun with it, you know, because you tell the truth. You tell it like it is, whether it hurts you or not. You know, you let your brothers and sisters know just what's going on. You know. And you want to say hello? Hello, Irene. This is your brother, Vincent.
Hey, little brother, how
hey,
you doing?
How you doing? Good morning to you.
I'm good. I'm good. You out there? You getting people out of jail and everything?
Say again.
I said you getting folks out of jail and.
Damn, very much so.
Well, that's a good thing. They'll be out for family day with their family tomorrow for the what some folks call the 4th of July.
And that's what I do. I put families together, Irene. You know that.
All right. That's Vincent Grant. You all hear me talk about my neighborhood grandmother. Well, that's her son. That's my neighborhood brother. Thanks for calling in. You going to say something else?
Yeah, Irene. It's good we don't have any more Nat Turners. If we do, I haven't heard about them.
You know, Nat Turner's great-great-grandson doesn't live in the city of St. Louis, but operates a business in the St. Louis area, but he has asked me not to disclose where and who he is, but his children live among us.
That's right. Okay.
Okay.
Love you back, Irene. Love you, Irene.
Love you guys. Have a good day. Be safe out there.
All right.
All right. Bye bye. Victoria, how are you?
I just had a comment about LRA, and I'm just going to speak from my personal experience. You know, I I had received an award from Mayor Bosley sometime for neighborhood services and a beautification award from Clarence Harmon. And a couple of years ago, exactly two, I tried to get a LRA house right at Page and Academy. It's been vacant for years with a big lot next door to it because I like gardening and flowers and stuff like that. And so I applied for the house, and I've been working a long time, and I have good credentials. But they told me when they got my application that I didn't have the amount to repair the house in my account, because they always ask for a copy of their bank statement. And I said, well, I figured I would get funding for that, and I would be able to get someone to repair it. I had a man come in and give me the estimate. And they said, oh, no, well, you probably would never get this house anyway because of the lot next door. We would hold that for a development. And this was a director talking to me, a female.
Okay.
She was telling me this. I said, are you saying that I applied for this house and you already knew you wouldn't give it to me? And she said, well, we wouldn't give you that house, I don't believe, because of that lot. Mm-hmm. I said, so you're really telling me that I applied for this house for nothing?
Okay. Have you driven by that lot?
Yeah, I've driven by that lot.
Is someone presently working on it?
My husband said, the last time I drove by, I didn't see anyone, but my husband told me there's someone working there.
Yes, yes.
Someone probably has finally gotten that house because no big developer came in.
And that was like 2 years ago, you said?
Yeah, and I had gotten my permission from Terry and everything. And now, you know, that really upset me because I felt like at this point, all these vacant houses that we have, they should have a better plan in place to put them in the hands of people. And not looking in people's accounts, trying to see if they have enough to fix them up. Because, you know, things will happen as you get the house. Things will happen that will assist you. But just to turn people down flat because they're expecting a big developer. I had looked at Dick Gregory Place, and I think those are beautiful houses. And a man was working over there on one house, and he told me, he said, every one of these houses, with the exception of two, can be repaired. He said two of them have been burned so bad inside. He said, but every one of them can be repaired. And the one that he was working on now, they have at a price of $250,000. And I'm like, whoa.
Well, Victoria, let me say this. You mentioned Terry. Were you talking about Terry Kinsey?
Yes.
Well,
I talked to him several times, and he was so happy that someone was going to try to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, Terry is the chairman of the Public Safety Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And this committee is taking up this resolution that has already been passed. And so I would suggest that you perhaps give Terry a call and let him know that you're glad that his committee is going to be taking this resolution up.
Mm-hmm,
and also encourage him to have some hearings out in the community, perhaps at West End Community Center or somewhere where the community could come in and give their testimony regarding this situation.
And get some creative financing, some creative programs, like used to be a dollar auction program.
Mm-hmm.
All those things need to be in place so we can get back to where we were in the 70s when we won an award for the renovation of existing housing. The city won an award for that.
Right.
They did the Central West End. And that whole move there just really discouraged me. I was ready to move out of the city.
Don't go, dear.
Well, I found another house I'm buying from a bank, and it's like $40,000. I've already gotten the financing, and the realtor is trying to get the bank to pay for all the repairs.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm like, well, LRA can just go somewhere for me. But I really feel bad for the people who live in the city, like myself. We're being prohibited from fixing up our own neighborhood.
And that's why it's important to come down to that hearing on July 13th at 1 p.m. The Public Safety Committee will be taking up Alderman Troop's Resolution 30 regarding LRA. Thanks for calling in, Victoria.
I appreciate it, and thank WGNU.
Okay, bye-bye. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
So happy to hear you. I didn't know if you were a tape or real. This was the real voice.
No, this is a Memorex. This is real deal. This is a real deal. But, you know, replays are very important. Replays are very important.
I really like to hear the real one. this morning.
Replays are very important because it is with repetition that people pick up information that sometimes they don't get the first time around.
Well, repetition, will you tell them to pick up this trash that they keep throwing down? Repetition, please clean up. And we need some money for someone to come and clean up these vacant lots.
Well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about LRA, your alderman, if this is Martha West, has introduced a resolution. So I'm sure that you're going to try to make an effort to get down and give testimony regarding the conditions of the LRA property, particularly in the first ward, but being concerned about the entire community.
Entire community, because when you drive through, like I'm just going to church and all, I'm just looking at my community all over the fourth ward. I just go down St. Louis Avenue, and it hurts to see this. And like the lady was talking about, with all these boarded up buildings that we have, it should be a simpler way to purchase them. And also the money for graffiti. And I wish the graffiti artists would go someplace else and stop putting it on the...
Yeah, and we need to find out exactly what the city's policy is, because at one time they would come out and take it off, and then they changed the policy. Now we're being told that they switched back. But I have a full board,
okay,
Ms. West.
Okay, one more thing. Tell the community and you, pick up this week's Sentinel, this week's, and read the editorial. Read it.
Yeah.
This week's Sentinel. It's concerning us as a people.
Yeah, okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Now, therein, you're going to face a challenge. You're going to face a challenge trying to find the Sentinel. But Ms. West recommends that you pick up this week's Sentinel. Z, I'm going to talk to you, but then I'm going to let you speak just a little bit because I have two other callers who haven't been on yet this morning.
Oh, well, I wanted to go international. I wanted to ask your opinion about this amnesty proposal from the leaders of Iraq, and it's the response in the congressional halls here to that. They're saying in this amnesty proposal that anyone who was involved in the insurrection would receive amnesty, no matter who in the conflict they killed. Now, the United States is saying that is not acceptable. You follow me?
So then where can there be peace?
Yeah. My point is that there's always been amnesty.
Mm.
And how can we dictate? See, that is the contradictions. We're there to assist these folks, not as an occupying army, but we're there assisting these folks. The Iraqi people and government is in power, which is just a big joke.
Mm-hmm.
So soon as they put amnesty in the proposal, it is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But amnesty is intricate and key if you're talking about reconciliation within your country, indigenously.
Right. And I will comment on that a little later, but I'm going to try to get to some calls because one caller is on a cell phone, and
okay.
I'll talk with you later. Thanks for calling, Izzy. I will. Thank you. Andre.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay. I want to say something about this LRA situation, but I want to turn this radio down, too, so it wouldn't interrupt. I, too, have tried to get a property. And
from LRA?
Right. And from what I can tell, there really are a lot of unnecessary hoops and hurdles that you go through. Plus the point, I would like to know if there's anybody on that board or anybody that they hire, not only to maintain these properties, but to do periodic reviews. Because I'm telling you, many of these properties, especially in the fourth ward, are in such bad condition, they really aren't ready for anything but the wrecking ball. And I'm wondering if this isn't part of a plot also to give these bricks away to the salvage companies. I'm not going to call any names because I'm not giving anybody any advertisement, but you know what I mean.
I do.
So many of these properties, I went to a property right here on St. Louis Avenue, for example, right across from the school. I can't think of the school, just above Lambden.
Mm-hmm.
The property,
Simmons?
Simmons, yeah. The property is directly across from that school.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful little brick Victorian college. Guess what? All the back end has fallen off. What could you do with that?
Well, there are some people that could do something with it, but the fact of the matter is that the property has been allowed to sit.
Exactly.
And I have to say something. With respect to the individuals who work for LRA and property maintenance, my hat goes off to them. Those guys, and it's not that many of them, they have a yeoman's task to do. And they are given direction in terms of where to cut, how long to stay, how many lots to stay. And they are short order. And therefore, I don't want to pounce on them per se. We're talking about the administration of LRA because there are some very conscientious folk. But sometimes people say they come out and they just cut. Well, those guys may have 40 lots to cut that day, which is unreasonable.
Right. They're only going to do the job they're directed to do. I'm not even talking about them. I'm talking about the administration.
I understand. I just wanted to say that.
Uh-huh. And like I said, some of these properties, yes, they could be repaired, but at what cost? And you know, there comes a point where you reach diminishing value.
But you know what, Andre? That's when we need to start thinking outside the box. I'm aware of several individuals. Matter of fact, I was in a Home Depot yesterday, ran into a sister that's a young developer, been buying property, renovating. She's going to be working with some sisters who have been released from prison and training them on how to do plumbing and things of that nature. I'm also aware of the Hendersons who have been, you know, training people, taking folks off the street, who are certified instructors from the Department of Labor, who are trying to put in place some things. We've got to think not just about buying and selling, but how can we put other things together? You know, just think if we had an entity that trained young folks in, and we could immediately put them to work renovating property. We have to think outside the box to address this problem.
I think it'd be a great idea if the city were or the state were to go in partnership with some of these technical schools just for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And give if you're going to give tax abatements to anybody, a tax write-off, give it to the companies.
I would like it to be not necessarily, although the technical schools could be involved, but I would also like it to be those contractors from our community and builders from our community who have been involved in employing and training individuals right out the street. So I would like to see it both ways.
I'm open to all that.
All right. Thank you, Andre. You be safe here.
Yeah, good holiday.
You too. Good morning, Miss Mary. How are you?
I'm great. I thought you said you was going to be on Wednesday.
No, I am going to be on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Listen, I'm not going to keep you long.
And I don't have.
Saturday. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm going to say this quickly. Maybe I don't have enough to complain about, but this is one of my complaints. I'm blessed concerning some people, concerning what's happening with me. But it's a... Do they ever enforce the law about dog poop on people's lawns?
You know what? I don't know, but that's one of my neighbors. That's one of her biggest complaints.
Oh, when you go to mow your grass, you got to pick up 3 and 4 and 5 and some big dogs. You can tell by the sizes. And I sat in my window saying, well, maybe they come early in the morning. I get up and look out. But I said, I can't approach these people about that because... I don't want any confusion. It seems like everyone around here look like they walk and have dogs, and they just, you'd be surprised of the poop I get on my lawn.
Well, there is a poop scoop law ordinance in the city of St. Louis, and I would just suggest that if you know the individuals, even if you don't want to approach them, that you do complain about it.
Well, I have complained, and my other neighbors, I thought they were picking on my lawn. I have a great big lawn in the front, and I say, let me look. I look and I tell my neighbor, they say, we get it sometime too. And I start looking. I say, maybe they like this yard. So someone told me something I could put down to keep them, run them away. And I'm going to try to, I put some of that down last year and I still had problems.
Okay, well.
Okay, I didn't want to keep you long, but I just want to know, give me a suggestion on how to handle it.
I really don't know what to tell you other than, you know, you can call and complain about it, you know, to...
my alderman.
to your alderman. You can call the Citizen Service Bureau. You can call the police. I mean, it's a violation of their ordinance.
I wouldn't I'm honest, I wouldn't
want to
call nobody.
I do. I do it. You didn't want to call for some poop. For some poop. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good morning.
Good morning, Sister Irene J. Smith. How are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm good. XX Peter.
And your family? I hope everyone's fine.
Everybody's good.
You know, I want to make comment on two things. One, you had a caller talked about the state of Israel, and I totally agree with it.
She's right on point.
You know, there's a... The thing with this soldier that was taken hostage, you know, when people take, I mean, when groups take people of any concern, like especially this, a hostage, this is supposed to open up the door for negotiations. But, you know, on as far as Israel's concerned, they have acted totally rambunctious in their actions.
And that's the nicest thing you can say.
Yes, that's very nice, I'm saying. And the Palestinian prisoners that they are holding, and for the reason that they're holding, it's totally ridiculous. But, you know, another thing you're talking about, the developers, we have in our community the talent and the know-it-all within workers in order to fulfill the labor force for any developer that would like to have people working on them for them as a crew. One of the things that was remarkable to me is that whenever you do work for properties that's concerning with the housing, HUD, Housing Authority, they have a list of people who sign up, let it be known, the talents that they have, their availability to work in any capacities, especially those talents that they list. And this list runs up into the hundreds. And I was surprised to see that myself when I had an opportunity to, you know, seek some of that work a long time ago. But we do have that talent, and that talent can be assembled into crews, and you know, you just need the developers that have the funding to you know, continue on and be consistent with it, where they can be a full-time job, not a one project and lay them off, but go from one to the other and on down the line.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it's going to take to maintain and sustain our community.
Yes, and we see that going on elsewhere. You know, another thing too, Irene J. Smith, I had an opportunity.
If you call me Irene, then you won't have to say the J.
Okay. I had an opportunity to be over in South St. Louis, and I think I was over there on near Mary 1 Johnson. They had an advertisement for houses that's for sale over there, and well, you wouldn't believe some of those buildings, nothing but a shell, just outside walls and a roof, is going for over $300,000 for developers. And I think in Shunner, of all the buildings that was tore down here in North St. Louis, and some are still standing, of even better condition than those that they're selling for those exuberant amounts of money.
Exactly.
It's just a shame.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're at the bottom of the hour. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. Liz is taking a little time out, so I'm sitting in from her, Irene J. Smith. I'll be back with you after the break. Stay tuned.
On a cloudy day, fields where the yellow grass grows knee high, so won't you try to come away with me, and we'll kiss on a mountain top. Come away with me, and I'll never stop loving you.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Former undisputed world welterweight champion Corey, the next generation space, will challenge the IBF junior middleweight champion Roman Made in Hell Karmazon for his crown. Spinks has to redeem himself in front of his hometown fans. But Roman Karmazon from the gritty streets of Russia has no intention of losing his belt in St. Louis. Saturday, July 8th, Savage Center, St. Louis. It'll be a tough night of boxing. Be there! Also featuring the return of the former unified cruiserweight champion Jean-Marc Mormack on his quest to regain his crown. And undefeated local talent Devin Alexander fights for the WBC Youth Welterweight Championship. Savage Center, Saturday, July 8th, live. Karmazon versus Sphinx, IBF Junior Middleweight Championship. Tickets start at just $25 through Savage Center. Ticketmaster locations, Ticketmaster.com, or call 314-241-1888 or 314-421-4400. Fight cards subject to change. It's a losing.
Hi, this is Judy Moskov. Join me for A Gardener's Notebook every Monday at noon. We'll be talking with gardening experts and sharing information that you need to know. Get the latest dirt on everything from tomatoes to trees. That's A Gardener's Notebook every Monday at noon.
Learn the Ten Commandments of Firearm Safety at the Columbia Bottom Conservation Area on Tuesday, July 11th from 9 to noon. Practice your shooting skills using a variety of targets. All equipment is provided. To sign up, call 314-877-6014. Sharpshooting news to you from WGNU.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Like a long, lonely stream, I keep running towards a dream, moving on, moving on. Like a branch on a tree, I keep reaching to be free, moving on.
Go outside, you won't have any problem finding the sun. Oh, it's a little overcast, probably hazy from the heat and global warming. And Zia had asked me what my thoughts about the situation with the Israeli and the Palestinians. You talking about ever since I was like, man, in junior high school, it's always been about spin. And it's always been about a profound bias of the U.S. toward Israel. The Palestinians and the Israelis are all both at fault. But they both have a right to exist. And if an Israeli takes someone that's a soldier or whatever, that's a Palestinian. So it's kidnapping, just like when it's vice versa. The other thing is the news media's characterization of attacks by the Palestinians. You know, it's always characterized as terrorists or something to that effect. But when you have the same thing happening with the Israeli, is characterized as something totally different from a more of a defense mode. The situation there is a very volatile one. It kind of epitomizes the violence that exists throughout the world. But the fact of the matter is, when you have one group of people, the Israeli, trying basically to deny the Palestinians' right to exist and to occupy land, then you have a problem. You know, when I think of from a biblical standpoint, you got you got cousins fighting. You know, some of us joke about it sometime, although it's hardly a joking matter. You have ain't Sarah's children fighting Hagar's children, you know? But the fact of the matter is they both have a right to exist, and I am just hopeful that the peace movement from individuals from both sides can gain momentum, because if not, it's going to be just as my grandmother used to tell me from the time that I was a kid, the Middle East will be the spot that determines the end of the world. And I'm going to talk to Mr. Davis. Good morning.
Good morning, Irene J. Smith.
How are you, Mr. Davis?
Yeah, just fine. Fine there, Irene. Yeah, it's a good thing that you started tying in things from overseas with what's going on here in St. Louis with the LRA. You know, I was thinking that, Bush sends all of our young men and women overseas to Iraq fighting for those people's rights over there and fighting for a better land and country for those people. I was wondering if we involved Bush in as to what's going on right here in St. Louis with the LRA, the way they are treating the people here who want to develop their land that's right across the street from them or either right next door to them, that if we would write to Bush, let him know, you think he would take and send some of our young fellas and girls here to help the people with the government and the LRA do the right thing for the people that are right here? You know, some of our brothers and sisters are over there fighting, and that maybe if they came back here and had their uniforms on and did some fighting right here against the LRA, maybe we could take and accomplish some things, you think?
I think so. I mean, we need as much help as we can get.
Yeah.
But I certainly understand how a national policy could impact the disposition and the of LRA's properties. But
yeah.
I don't want to take and I'm never one to defend Georgia Bush, the president, but I do believe in laying the blame exactly where it should be, and that is on the city administration.
Sure.
Failure to develop a policy.
Yeah.
At least a policy that is beneficial to our community. Now, there may be a policy, and I'm not suggesting that the comptroller is a party to that, because I don't believe that she is.
Yeah.
However, there are things that can be done to salvage LRA property. I'm giving you an example.
All right.
When I was on the Board of Aldermen, because sometimes I've gotten to the point as I grow older that I fight certain battles, and in certain things I get to the point where I just want to develop a solution to the problem. So I went when I went back to the Board of Aldermen in 2001,
right.
I approached I think it was Barb Geisman I spoke with, and I indicated to her that I basically wanted to have a maintenance crew to deal with LRA properties in the first ward.
Mm-hmm.
And also I had some other ideas about how we could better maintain them and also structure some situations to give some young people some opportunities to renovate LRA property.
Certainly.
I was told, no, you can't do that.
Oh.
But then as we drew closer to election about a year before, I was permitted in a limited capacity to use some of the block grant funds. Now, keep in mind, I don't believe that I should have had to use block grant funds to address this problem. But I guess from my vantage point at that time, I just wanted a solution to the problem, and so I took a small amount of money. Now I shouldn't have had to do that, but I was aware of how the individuals who work at LRA, I was aware of their workload and I wanted to try to do something to address that situation. But one thing for sure, we have got to do something. And if we do not address it, and that's why I really commend the efforts of Alderman Troop in attempting to address the situation. And I am very hopeful that Terry Kennedy, who I believe has a great deal of concern for our community, I hope that Terry Kennedy will hold hearings in the community.
We'll hold several
hearings out in the community to give individuals who work during the day an opportunity to come and give testimony regarding the impact of LRA and how it has impacted insurance rates and how it has impacted. And it also impacts a person just psychologically.
Yes. Just think of how it would help over in Iraq if they knew and could see that the government in the United States is doing the right thing for the people that are there.
Well,
I would think
that it would help the folks over in Iraq if the U.S. government, number one, had never invaded their country.
Very true.
And
not have the conditions that we have here, and then going to go to another country and try to talk about doing something there when you got all of this type of a thing going on right here in your own country. You cannot go and change other people when you have things right in your own country going on, like the LRA and that, and your people wanting to develop the land that's right across the street from them and everything. I have some friends, young people that when I worked in the public school that are in the military. So what I was thinking of doing is writing and letting them know what's going on right here. And then I'm going to write Bush and let him know, and maybe some of them will take and volunteer to come right here and get this LRA people on the ball and get them straight, see?
All right. Thank you.
Very good then, Irene.
All right.
Surely. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Have a safe holiday.
And you also.
Okay, this is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who is taking a few days off. Our contact numbers are 454-0400. If you want to reach us long distance, it's 1-877-920-WGNU. Or you can log in on the World Wide Web, at least for now, at www.wgnu.net. We have been talking about LRA, the Land Reutilization Authority. Many people call them the city. We're talking about their property, how LRA property impacts our community, and what can be done to address the impact of LRA properties on our community, because it affects our property values. It affects your ability to get insurance. It affects the overall safety of our community. And it also has, to me, a psychological impact. You know, quite often I think about all the number of lots. And don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that it is LRA's fault that they get the property. But if it is reached a point, as Alderman Troop indicated earlier, where they have become overwhelmed, and I submit that they have, then perhaps they need to be going to the state legislature to see what else we can do to address this issue of the overabundance of LRA lots, LRA's inability due to finance, due to whatever, being able to maintain property in our community that's impacting us as we speak. It impacts the conditions in which our children are growing up in, and I submit to you that I believe that it also impacts them psychologically in ways that we can probably are unable to measure. Well, it's that time again. We got to take a little break here. We got to pause for the calls. We'll be back shortly. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who's taking a little time off. I'll be back after the break.
Like an old dusty road, I get weary from the load. Moving on, moving on.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in health care providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Hi, this is Lethea Owens with a Motivational Moment. I'd like to encourage you to find out who you are and be it on purpose without apology. I believe that there is great power and influence when we know who we are. When we understand the gifts and talents that we possess, we're able to make a strong and powerful impact on the world around us. So please join me on Mondays from 1 to 2 for Motivational Mondays, where your dreams become reality on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger. Listen to me Wednesday, July 5th, when my guest will be Nathan Muller. Ever heard of the NAFTA Superhighway? You will if you tune in. That's the Sloan Ranger Show, Wednesday, July 5th at 5 p.m., right after the fireworks, only on WGNU.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson, inviting you to join me every Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. You'll hear stories of people just like you who are overcoming obstacles and making the difference in the lives of others. You're invited to share your thoughts. You know people are what matter most to me, and I enjoy talking with you and helping you reach your highest goals. Join me for the Laurie Fulkerson Show, Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. We're here to discuss what matters most to you.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Wake-up call. This is the Liz Brown Show, and this is yours truly, Irene J. Smith, sitting in for Liz, who's taking some time off. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. We have been talking about LRA. We've talked a little bit about the Palestinian and Israeli conflict. And I guess Mr. Davis raised an interesting point. He said he was going to write George Bush to see if we could have better use of our soldiers, and perhaps our soldiers could come back and help build up our communities. It was interesting, you all may recall several years ago, back in 1994, 95, 97, we had this policy whereby the State Guard would come in and tear down so-called drug houses, as if the house sells drugs. I went over, and I think the captain was Captain Raja, very nice man, and as they were tearing down a frame structure in the first ward, I began to talk to him about different skills that guardsmen might have, such as carpentry, plumbing. And I asked him, would he be interested in perhaps the guardsmen being involved in renovating property? And he got real excited. And he said, you know, Alderwoman, he said, I and my men would much rather use our skills to be building up a community rather than tearing down a house. And as things went on, I think he was relocated, and then I left the Board of Aldermen for a time. But there are so many things that we can do working collaboratively, working together. Just as XX Peter called in and he indicated, he talked about the skills in our community. We have so many craftsmen in our community. I was talking with my nephew through my sister. She was visiting me. My sister's here. My nephew lives here, but he went to New Orleans to visit his grandfather. And we're blessed that they made it through the hurricane and his house was not totally destroyed. And he was able to move back into his house. In fact, he moved back into his home week before last. And my sister was talking about this brother that lived on the block across the street from Belize, and she said she just talked about how many skills this brother had, and it was like they saw him because her father-in-law is a roofer, and this brother can across the street. Their neighbor across the street could just do anything. He's the handyman. I mean, he could, whatever it is, he can fix it from carpentry to plumbing to whatever. He just has that kind of mind and those kind of hands. And we know that throughout our community, there are many brothers and sisters who have skills such as that. So the question becomes, why can't we, as community, come together and do what needs to be done? Now, there are those that will say, well, we don't have the money, and certainly money is a factor. Materials have to be purchased. But it just kind of troubles me when I look at our community and I see others coming into our community doing things to assist our elderly in terms of helping to repair their homes. And knowing the level of skills that exist in our community, certainly, surely, we can come together and begin to rebuild. Because I'm telling you that if we don't do it, it will not happen. And if we don't do it, our community will be totally destroyed and people will be displaced. Just as the sister Victoria called in and she was talking about the houses over on Dick Gregory Place. And she's talking about the sales price of those properties. And you heard someone else call in and they talked about the shell of buildings that are selling for $300,000. And I immediately thought about the brownstones up in Harlem, you know, that are selling at ungodly prices, $500,000, $1 million. It's just empty, but it's because of the land and where it is. So we have to begin to understand the value of land. And in understanding the value of land, we need to make a commitment to come together to do what we can to stabilize our community. I was talking to a sister yesterday at Home Depot, Vanessa. She was with us in the community. The sister that had her arm hurt doing demonstrating down at the Board of Education. And this sister has been involved in renovating property. And she has a passion for it. And she said, I ran just to understand. She said, it's just so much property. And she was telling me about a brother who had come here from California. And I told her, I said, I know. I said, he was driving down my street and he offered to buy my house, you know, for what I would have probably considered an exorbitant amount of money. But the fact of the matter is he had the resources and he has brought a team of people here that are buying property and renovating it. We can do the same thing. Don't sit back. Don't let our community just go down, down, down. We have the ability to maintain and sustain our community. You know, I think about it, and I wish these brothers still walked among us. But I think about Roosevelt Cotton, and I think about Walter Nash, who is still living, who is a carpenter, and of course Charles Troup is still with us, and I think about John Dalton, and I think about these brothers, how they came together and how they would work on each other's property and renovated property. I think about Alderman Troup, and I have to say this because not because he's a good friend, not because he's my mentor, not because he's someone I looked up to, but because he came into our community, and in every piece of property that he has renovated in our community, he has done so without tax abatement, without any assistance from any governmental entity. And in so doing, he has trained many young people. One of my godsons now jokes about it. You know, they call him Uncle Troop. They say, we go by there, and he say, hey, get that hammer. You know, start tearing that wall out. And they were very young. And as a result of that, one of them now, he buys and sells property. He renovates property. And it's that spirit that we have got to ignite in our community, to stabilize it and to maintain it. And if we don't, while we can certainly point fingers, and certainly there are those in government that are responsible and should be held accountable for what they have permitted and allowed and have conspired to do in our community, but at the same time, we as community must come together to address this issue. So I said my little soapbox. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call. This is the Liz Brown Show. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance 1-877-920-WGNU. Or, of course, for now, you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. And the reason I keep saying for now is, as we discussed last week about the legislation that has been introduced and passed through the House and the Senate, the Internet as we know it may, in fact, change. I'm going to take this registered voter call. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Harry. I'm use the term registered voter because I don't want to leave my name right now.
That's okay.
But I want to tell you something. I retired from the Marine Corps about 5 years ago. I've been gone many, many years.
You've got about 40 seconds.
Oh, you have 40 seconds?
You have 40 seconds, or you can call me back Wednesday morning.
Okay, I'll call you back Wednesday.
All right, you have a safe holiday.
Thank you.
All right. This has been the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is yours truly, Irene J. Smith, sitting in for Liz, who's taking a few days off. I won't be with you tomorrow, but I'll be back with you Wednesday morning. Look forward to talking to you. Be safe.
That keeps you strong. Don't you think it's time to leave?
It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. It was supposed to be a day off for NASA, waiting for tomorrow's third attempted launch of the shuttle, but that may not happen now. A crack in the insulating fuel feed could keep Discovery on the ground. ABC's Vic Ratner has more from the Kennedy Space Center.
This is a serious problem that could force a postponement of the launch. NASA officials confirm that a 4 to 5 inch long crack has been found in the insulating foam at a